is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Do I need to say it? Of course we're not ready, but we're on the air. This is the way we roll here at One Bills Drive. 4 minutes after the hockey show, we clean up their mess, we try to get on the air, and this is how we start every day. Right, Donald? You know the drill here.
I'm ready.
You're ready? Well,
no,
take it away
ready.
While
I'm
I get ready.
I'm not ready. Well, welcome in. You know, it's Murph, are you getting ready for your trip? When are you leaving?
I'm leaving. Hang on. I got to get ready for the show here first. Leaving Saturday morning. My son Mark is going with me. Can't wait. Final Four. This is the third Final Four I've gone to.
Really?
I went to one in 1981 in Philadelphia, Donald. You know how they
Is Syracuse playing?
Nope.
Okay.
You know how you watch Final Four and they say, if you'd like tickets to next year's Final Four, enter
Is there some sweepstakes?
Yeah. Well, it's just like you enter a lottery. I did it with friends of mine, and we got them, and we went. We drove to Philadelphia, Indiana, LSU. Who else was in it? North Carolina and Virginia.
Who won?
I can't remember. No, you know what? I didn't say for Monday because I had to go back to work on Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the weekend that President Reagan was shot on that Monday.
Wow.
I was back at work, yep.
All right.
In the newsroom in Buffalo at WBEN. But that was my first Final Four. Went 5 years ago. Leaving Saturday. Oh, my password's incorrect. Leaving Saturday morning with my son Mark and a couple of friends and really looking forward to it. Going to see Michigan play Saturday night at 6 o'clock in San Antonio. You know, I was thinking, Donald, and I know that you're a Michigan hater. Maybe this will resonate with you. Yeah. I know of approximately 20 to 25 Michigan fans from Western New York who are going. I mean, people are going, and
you just have to relax a second here.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Well, go ahead. People are going.
There's people going who are fans of my friend John Beilein, friends of my friend John Beilein, Canisius friends of John Beilein. He coached there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. He coached at ECC. He coached at Nazareth in Rochester, coached down the road at Lemoyne in Syracuse. He's got friends and fans scattered all over upstate New York. This is a big deal for many of them. I was reading a story in a Niagara County newspaper this morning about the group that's getting together in Lockport to watch Saturday's game and the group that's going. I mean, so don't disagree. You can be a hater if you want. My point is,
I'm a hater.
You are a hater when it comes to Michigan basketball. And maybe you should reconsider that because many of your listeners right now are either Michigan basketball fans or John Beilein fans.
No.
No.
It's crazy because I have an uncle who has always – he's been a Michigan fan since the Fab Five.
Okay.
And
you don't mind if I continue to get ready for the show?
Yeah, no, that's fine. So he's been a Michigan fan since the Fab Five. And so Saturday night we went out to eat at Char House in New Jersey, which is right on the Hudson River, right on the water, looking at the skyline, New York City skyline, all of that stuff. And I'm sitting there with him. And we're watching the game, and I like to talk trash to him. And I totally forgot he was a Michigan fan. And so we're sitting there, and we were at a 50th birthday party. And he goes, don't act like you don't remember. I'm about to start talking trash to you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, the Michigan game. And I'm like, oh, man, I forgot you were a Michigan fan. And then I told him that you were a Michigan fan and that if they had won, that you'd be going. And he was like, you know what? I knew I liked Murph.
Who's this, your uncle? What's his name?
His name is Thomas.
Does he ever listen to the show?
He did. He was when he was out of work. No,
okay.
No. He did for a while. He had gotten hurt at
Thomas,
work.
You're my so man, and I'll get you something
in San
Antonio.
I think he's back at work now, though. You guys, both of you guys will get text messages from me if you lose. If you win, you won't hear from me.
What is that? What is that?
If y'all win, don't text me because I'm not responding.
I won't.
And I'm going to turn on my read receipt so that you can see I actually read the message and didn't respond.
I'm not going to text. Look, I think they'll win Saturday. I don't know about Monday. I think they'll win Saturday almost for sure. Michigan's going to be Everybody, three quarters of the crowd at the Alamo Dome is going to be rooting for Loyola Chicago. Wouldn't you anticipate?
Oh, yeah. Underdogs.
Underdogs. Yeah. You know, Cinderella nice little school. Story. Cinderella story, blah, blah, blah.
What's her name? Sister Jean.
Yeah, Sister Jean.
You
That's
should
fine.
You should make your way down on the court like you usually do and go talk to her.
Yeah, I'll talk to her and wish her well. I'm afraid she's going to have an unhappy end to her weekend in San Antonio, but that's okay.
Do you have like special seats, like on the floor, anything like that?
No. I don't know where our seats are yet. We just got our tickets yesterday. I haven't seen them. 5 years ago at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, we were like five rows from the court.
Okay, was when Michigan played.
Michigan played, and they lost to Louisville in the final. Louisville, of course, has vacated that loss, so there is no national champion for 2013.
You had to slide that one in there.
Well, the last team standing would have been the Michigan Wolverines in 2013. They don't want it under those circumstances, but it is a vacated national championship by Louisville, even though they won that game. Regardless, we're five rows from the floor. I don't know if we'll be that close. I don't care. I'm glad to be in the building, glad to be with my friends, and hope to go see Michigan win and really proud and happy to join all the others, many of them, who wish well to the Michigan Wolverines and especially to Coach John Beilein, a great guy. You would like him.
I got a
text from today about this? Ooh. Sean McDermott. Have you heard of him?
Really?
Coach? He said, can you send me Coach Beilein's contact info? I want to send him congratulations and wish him well.
You know, it's amazing.
What
Sean
about
McDermott,
that?
I mean, he's not a hater like me.
He is not.
But it's amazing because something happened. I can't remember exactly what it was. But Sean McDermott actually sent me a message. And this was in the middle of training camp. And I'm like, Coach. Oh, thank you, Coach. But, I mean, in my mind, I'm like, wow, like this guy actually pays attention. He is for real.
Yep.
When you guys as fans and you see the videos of him going out into the parking lot before games and stuff like that, I mean, he is that type of person. He will send you a random text message. It doesn't matter who you are, especially here in the building. It doesn't matter who you are. If there is something that happens in your family or something to congratulate you on or something like that, he will find time to send you a message. It's amazing.
He did it to me about a year ago. I got an award from Madai College, some broadcast thing. And that Saturday, I'm sitting at home and looking at my emails. I got an email from Sean McDermott. Sean had been here like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I'd met him twice maybe before that. But a nice message. Congratulations. That's pretty cool. He is like that. He's for real. He'll send a nice – in fact, I know he sent out text messages to Mark Schmidt at Bonaventure and to Nate Oates at UB when they made the tournament
this
year.
That is pretty cool.
He's paying attention, and he gets it.
That's pretty cool.
Especially,
you know,
I think, when it comes to coaches.
Yeah, exactly, when it comes to coaches. He understands the grind.
Yeah.
He understands what it takes to get to whatever it is, a championship, win a championship, lose a championship. He understands all of that stuff. But he understands that, that's really just your job, and you are a person at the end of the day. And you appreciate – a message from someone like him, who is the head coach of the Buffalo Bills right now, you'd appreciate it. Whether you're winning something, you're losing something, you appreciate just the fact that he actually thought about you and reached out.
Yeah. So I am going to the Final Four, Donald. I'm leaving Saturday. I'll be with you today, tomorrow, Friday, doing shows. I will not be here next Monday and Tuesday. I'll be in San Antonio, Texas. And regardless of your position on Michigan's fate this weekend, I'm going to have fun.
Well, I will find it. I will find it in my gut, if you guys win it all, to actually congratulate you.
Well, thank you.
I'll find it somewhere deep down in there. I'm gonna have to dig it out. It's deep.
Don't.
It's deep,
right.
Way
if
down in there.
If you can't find it, don't worry. I'll be okay.
I'll find it. I'm pretty good at finding
things.
Don't
dig too hard. If you can't make it happen, that's fine. I'll be fine.
I'm pretty good at finding stuff, though. You know, I gotta move the pillow, move different things out of the way,
and then
it is, right there.
If you can't, that's fine. We'll be fine. I'll have fun either way. Thank you, though, I think. We got a show to do today, 3 hours of broadcast excellence coming up until 3 p.m. today. Coming up at 2, one of our favorites, Lorenzo Alexander. We'll get his take on this. You know, Lorenzo's a sports fan.
Well, Lorenzo's probably going to side with you, but it's all good. I know how this works now.
Well, he's smart. He sees which way things are, and he goes with the person who's in the right. Lorenzo will be joining us at 2 o'clock today for that hour. Our buddy Mark Kelso is here in the building, going to stop by sometime this hour. Want to talk to Mark about some of the rules changes, including catch, no catch. And the interesting one that came up late yesterday, Donald, it wasn't even on the list of proposals. Late yesterday, NFL owners passed an unexpected rule to expand penalties for contact involving helmets. I guess we talked about it yesterday, a targeting-type penalty. This is more significant and more far-reaching than the NCAA's targeting rule, though. Under this change, a player will be penalized 15 yards and potentially ejected anytime he lowers his head to initiate and make contact with a helmet against an opponent. It applies to tacklers. It applies to ball carriers. It applies to linemen. It will take the place of a previous rule that limited the penalty to contact with the crown of the helmet. If we're reading this correctly, and we'll see how it plays out, any time a player on either side of the ball at any position, any time a player lowers his head to initiate contact and make to initiate and make contact against an opponent, it's 15 yards and potentially an ejection from the game. Man, that sounds far-reaching and sounds pretty amazing. Where did that come from?
Now, if you get ejected from the game, are you suspended for the next game?
I don't know that. It doesn't say that. I don't think so.
I wonder if we can get some clarification on that. But I think, and we were sitting watching ESPN earlier today, and they were talking about, Matt Hasselbeck was talking about, this is a game changer. And I think it is a game changer because, yeah, I understand it's for the safety of the players on the field, and you need to worry about the safety of the players on the field. But I think this right here is something that if you – because what's going to happen is you're going to start to see a lot more ejections. You're going to see it because – I mean,
if they enforce it to the letter.
If they enforce it to the letter.
Yeah.
You're going to start to see a lot more ejections because everybody lowers their head. And whether it's a running back, receiver who is about to get hit, you are taught you lower your shoulder. But it's like a natural instinct to actually lower your head. And I can't really explain it. It's just a natural thing. It's what you've been doing since you were young.
Well, don't they teach players to get low to make tackles? Keep your head up, but get low.
But get low, right. And so you were always taught low man wins.
Yeah.
You were always taught on defense, put a hat on a hat. I mean, coaches say that all the time. Put a hat on a hat. You put your sign and your Rydell on his sign, his Rydell. So, I mean, these are the things that coaches have been talking about forever in football. And now you're actually going to change it. And it's going to take some years before – I mean, it's going to take some years and a bunch of ejections before players say, all right, we're going to have to change the way we're actually playing the game. But once you do start to see that, does the game start to fade out in terms of the appeal to the audience? Because now guys are not hitting the same way, and people like to see that stuff. And so, you know, I think that this right here – is a game changer in that sense. You're going to start to see a lot more ejections, which means that the star players might not be in the games, which means that your viewers might not be watching.
The ejections still not defined what is going to constitute an ejection. The NFL Competition Committee has not yet addressed how ejections would be adjudicated, according to the chairman of the Top Competition Committee, Rich McKay. But when you hit opponents with your helmet, it's 15 yards, which – I get the idea. I get the intention. But, man, to do it at once in one, you know, to make it happen all of a sudden like this, maybe it just surprised me because it was not discussed before. I read a thing this morning that said the competition committee began to discuss it back at the combine, which was, what, a month ago. And then just it was a last-minute addition to the vote, the owners' meeting yesterday. Maybe they didn't want discussion about this. Maybe they didn't want folks talking about it.
They didn't want
media or anybody talking about it.
Because it's been a lot of backlash from media and players today. Once it came out last night, it was like, whoa. You had guys like Richard Sherman, who's always one of the most outspoken players on rule changes, because most rule changes happen on the defensive side of the ball. And so he spoke out, and you had players talking about this, current and former players. And you hear things like this. This is a game changer. You want us to change the way we're actually we have to go in there and hit. We've been taught to hit a certain way. The running backs, and I'm sure Lorenzo is going to talk about this because he's talked about this on this show in the past. A running back is coming. He's going to lower his shoulder. He's going to lower his head. So now I have to do what? I got to stay high. That doesn't – you don't win when you actually hired another person. You're taught to be lower than another person. So it's going to take some real learning. It's going to be a learning curve for a lot of these guys that are on the field that have been playing in the NFL for a long time. Everybody's been playing football a long time if you're at this level. But guys that have been in this league for a long time, it's going to be a learning curve for them now have to switch it up, especially if they are really ejecting players if they are ejecting them to the letter.
I think
you're going to have a lot of bang-bang plays that they're going to let go.
Imagine this. Bills, Patriots, New Era Field next October. Fourth and a foot and a half. Tom Brady, they don't huddle. They go right to the line of scrimmage. Tom Brady and the announcers will cite, you know, when Brady runs it on fourth and one, they convert 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady takes a snap, lowers his head, gets low, sneaks forward for the first down, and his helmet contacts another player's helmet. Are they going to toss Tom Brady out of that game? You want to bet me that he won't get tossed out of that game? I just think it's going to be crazy how this is officiated. Ejections, they don't have they don't even have a standard yet for ejections. Are they going to give the Patriots a 15-yard penalty on that play? Anybody want to bet on
that?
I doubt it.
I doubt it.
He's going to get the first down. His helmet might
Be low.
Yeah.
And
they might
so
make
what,
contact with some other helmets. Are they going to give him a 15-yard penalty?
What happens when he lowers his helmet and then a linebacker, because Tom Brady's been doing that forever.
Yeah,
and
effectively.
Effectively. And he goes and he lowers his helmet. A linebacker comes in, he lowers his helmet. That's helmet to helmet, technically. Tom Brady lowered his helmet. The linebacker lowered his helmet. Who gets the penalty on that?
Yeah. The problem with it is not that they're – look, we all want to protect players. We all want hits to the head to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think – I think they've done a good job when it comes to high hits and low hits, by the way, in a kind of a meaningful way over a couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are less headhunters out there now than there were 4, 5, 6 years ago in the NFL. Fewer hits to the knees. Eric Winston, who's an official with the NFL Players Association, he tweeted this, and I think he's spot on. He says, the league will continue to pass rules and fine players more with the hope that things will change. But here's the important part. Meaningful change will happen only when everyone, players, coaches, owners, share responsibility in making the game as safe as possible. This came out of nowhere. Competition committee sprung it on everybody at the end of the meetings late yesterday. Came out of nowhere. Has anybody talked to the players about the practical effects of lowering a helmet to make a hit? I don't know that they have.
You know, I can't remember if Lorenzo – we were at the Combine is when we were talking to Lorenzo about this. And, you know, Lorenzo being on the committee, on the player
side.
Executive
committee of the NFLPA.
Yeah, he is in the room when they're actually proposing these different rules changes. And they get to have their little 2 cents in there. And I felt like they brought it up to the players in that because he started to talk about, you know, they want me to change the way I actually have to go in there and hit somebody. And,
you're right,
and,
he did. I remember this now.
Yeah, and so it's going to be interesting to talk to him today when we get him on the air at 2 o'clock about this exact rule right here because this is a game changer for guys on the defense. Guys like Lorenzo that have been playing football a long time and not a headhunter. Lorenzo, you wouldn't call Lorenzo a headhunter.
No.
There are a lot of – I mean, guys all throughout the league, not headhunters. They're not intentionally trying to go in there and hit someone in the head, but natural instinct, you lower your shoulder, your head goes with it sometimes. And so now you could be ejected for that when you have Leonard Fournette. He's coming downhill on you. He lowers his shoulder, lowers his head. You go and lower your shoulder, lower your head. Are you both going to get ejected? You know, and so I think you're going to start to see a lot more blown out knees because of this, a lot more broken legs because now guys have to go low. And in the past, when players, especially guys like DBs, will go low on somebody and blow somebody's knees out, and it's like, oh, that was a dirty play. You went low on him. Well, now what do you want me to do? Because it's either I got to go high or I got to go really low, and really low is going to be right at his legs. And so, you know, now you can't complain that guys are blowing out their knees and stuff like that. And I'm talking about fans. I'm talking about the NFL because now as defensive players, you're forcing us to have to hit this way.
All right, we'll talk about this, the new rule that came out of nowhere late yesterday, lowering the head to initiate contact, 15-yard penalty, and a possible ejection. Mark Kelso is scheduled to join us this hour. We'll talk with him about it, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, and Lorenzo going to come by at 2 o'clock. In the meantime, we have something else to talk about. Yesterday on the show, our Twitter poll yesterday, what should the Bills do in the first round? Because it's been the topic of everybody's conversation for weeks now. And on Twitter yesterday, 62% of you said in the first round the Bills should trade up for a premium quarterback. Almost two-thirds said the Bills should trade up for a premium quarterback. Today, our Twitter poll question. All right, you want to trade up? What do you want to trade up for? Because the cost is going to be high, right? We all acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
The cost might be prohibitive for the Bills to trade up. But if you want to trade up, which quarterback is worth trading up for? That's our Twitter poll. It's up on Twitter right now at John Murphy Show. You can vote on there. Which quarterback is worth trading up for? 47% of you, almost half, say Josh Rosen from UCLA. 23% say Sam Darnold of USC. 20% say none. Nobody's worth it. 10% say Wyoming's Josh Allen. What do you think? Give us a call. If you were one of those who want to see the Bills trade up, who would you trade up for? Which quarterback do you have in mind? 803-0550 is the number. We'd prefer to talk to you on the telephone line so we have some dialogue. 803-0550, the number. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it on Twitter, vote on our Twitter poll, or engage on Twitter. If you're going to trade up for a quarterback, who do you have in mind? Who do the Bills have in mind? We don't know. Nobody knows. Plenty of speculation out there. If you ask me, Yes, I'd like to see the Bills trade up and not give away everything, but trade up to get one of these premium quarterbacks. Who would I trade up for? I would trade up for Sam Darnold, USC. 23% of you agree with me on that. A lot of people like Josh Rosen. Almost half of our respondents say Josh Rosen. Would I trade up to get Josh Allen from Wyoming? Maybe, but not as hard. I wouldn't go as hard as I would for Sam Darnold. It's really nobody else I would trade up for, Donald. I would put Darnold my number one, Josh Allen my number two. Nobody else I would try hard to trade up for. What about you? Which quarterback would you trade up for?
If I was trading up for one of these guys, I would trade up for Josh Rosen.
Really?
Yeah, I think Josh Rosen is the best passer out of all of them in this year's draft. I think he can put the ball where he wants to. I think he's a little bit misunderstood.
You like that video we have where he winks at the camera, right? That's what's got
it. Oh, yeah, definitely. Felt like he was looking right at me.
He was. Yes, he was.
See, what happens is I said that, and then you put the video on, and he's winking.
Yes.
You know, so he was winking at me, like, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
But I think, you know, he can put the ball wherever he wants to put the ball. And in this league, I want a guy to be able to put the ball where he wants to put it. I know you have questions about his personality, and I know you have questions about his health with the concussions and all of that stuff, but I think ultimately this is a guy who – is a pretty passer, and there's nothing receivers love more than a guy who can put it wherever he wants to put the ball. And the receiver doesn't really have to move, and that's what you see out of him coming out of college, and I think it's going to translate to the NFL as well.
Which quarterback is worth trading up for in your mind? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We've got none as an option if you think none of them are worth it. If you like your draft picks, don't want to trade up, that's an option for you as well. But let's talk about it. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. We can talk about this too, and this plays into the quarterback deal, Donald. Mel Kiper Jr., the expert on everything about the draft, right?
Yeah.
Is that a bona fide yeah, or is that a sarcastic?
That was a sarcastic yeah.
I thought it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mel. Mel's out with his mock draft 3.0. We are almost a month from tomorrow, the draft begins, round one. I don't know how many more mock drafts Mel will have. But on Mel Kiper's mock draft 3.0, his quarterback picks, his quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. He's got Josh Allen to the Browns, which he had in the first two. I haven't seen anybody but Mel Kiper project that, Josh Allen to the Browns. Have you?
No.
The number one pick? I think he's the only one.
He's the only one. Everyone I've seen is Sam Darnold.
He's got Sam Darnold going number two to the Giants. He's got UCLA's Josh Rosen going number three to the Jets. 1, 2, 3, three quarterbacks gone, first three picks. Fourth pick, Saquon Barkley goes to the Browns. And then the Broncos get Baker Mayfield. His Bills picks, defensive picks, both of them. He's got the Bills staying at 12 and going with linebacker Tremaine Edmonds. I like that pick. I hope the Bills wind up with him. He's got the Bills staying at 22 and getting quarterback Jair Alexander at 22. What do you think, Donald?
This is how flaky Mel Kiper is.
Flaky.
Flaky. That's right. When he first did his mock draft, his very first 1.0, Mel Kiper's mock draft, he had Josh Allen. Then they go to the Senior Bowl, and he doesn't have the best Senior Bowl practice week. And then in the game, he doesn't start out the game well. He played better in the second half. And Mel moves him back. Then all of a sudden, you go through the pro day now, and the pro day and the combine, and you get somebody like Hugh Jackson to come out and say, oh, man, this guy, he threw it to somebody once in the pro day, and you just heard it hit him in his sternum. And it was like, boom. And I'm like, wow. And so all of a sudden now he's back to number one, and Mel Kiper's a draft guru? No. This is what I'm talking about.
He is
the draft guru. This stuff, you know, it's his next one. If somebody comes out and says something bad or something like that, you're going to have Josh Allen back as the number four quarterback on the board, going to like number seven or something like that. I mean, that's how these mock drafts work. I think at the end of the day, teams like Sam Darnold the most. I think they are intrigued by Josh Allen and his size and his arm strength and all of that stuff. But I think ultimately, at number one, teams are starting to understand the importance of being able to make plays outside the pocket, but overlooking just the size, the natural size. I think that's something that they look at, and I get that. But I think they like Sam Darnold because he can kind of do everything. And Josh Allen, you're talking about, this is a big, physical, strong guy who can throw the ball 70 yards when he'll never probably have to throw the ball 70 yards. If he's throwing it 70 yards, that means we're losing and we're throwing a Hail Mary. And, hey, maybe that'll be his thing. He can drop some Hail Marys in there. But I think that ultimately they want a guy who can make all the throws, a guy who can make plays outside the pocket. I think the Browns will end up taking Sam Darnold.
Let us know what you think. Phone lines open 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. I had somebody overnight or this morning accuse me of pushing Josh Allen. I'm not pushing Josh Allen. I'm telling you what I hear from scouts, and I do talk to scouts. Mm-hmm. There is legitimate. I mean, Mel Kiper has him number one overall. I don't know if I'll go that far, but scouts love Josh Allen.
Oh yeah,
love him because of his measurables. Mark Kelso loves him, too. I talked to Mark previously. Mark's going to join us in a moment. Going to be right here on set. We'll talk with Mark about the draft, a little bit about the draft and some of those quarterbacks. We're going to talk to Mark about his racing team, which is having considerable success this year. And we're going to talk to Mark about these rules changes. All of that coming up when we return. John Murphy, Donald Jones, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy, Donald Jones joining us in studio. He hasn't been here in a while. I want to say 3 months or more. Mark Kelso, former Bills safety color analyst on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network with me. Hello, Mark. It's a long time. I haven't seen you in so long.
Well, you can tell I haven't been here for a while because I don't know how to put this earbud in.
Don't worry about it.
It's not a big deal, right? Yeah, it's good to see you.
How does it happen that you and I are practically joined at the hip, married, from August until January this year, and then I go 3.5 months without seeing you. What's up with that?
That's marriage. You need some time away.
A serious withdrawal.
It was. I missed you.
And you talk about it every day. And for me, it's really different because you're typically working during the day, and maybe you get to the weight room at maybe 5:30 because I still like to work out a lot. But then from 6 to 9 or 6 to 10 every night, you're studying film, and now it's. There's kind of a void there. I mean,
what do you do with that time?
You got that time back. Well, sometimes I watch The Voice, and you spend actually what I do
you
is
watch
I
the voice.
Well, I spend a little bit more time in the office, and so I'm at the race team probably now till 6:30 or so, 6:45. Then you get in the weight room a little bit, and so you just kind of carve out that time a little bit differently, and don't have an opportunity to watch the film at the moment. But
the race team, we should let folks know if you don't know, Mark is operations manager, yes. Right, for JTG Doherty Racing. A racing team in Carolina with not one but two cars in the is it Sprint Cup?
It used to be the Sprint Cup, but Monster bought those rights last year.
Oh, what is it?
So we're 2 years. So it's the Monster Cup Series.
So it's the highest level of NASCAR.
Yeah, it's the highest
level
of NASCAR racing.
Two cars, and your team's doing well. Your most veteran racer, Allmendinger, right? AJ Allmendinger finished 8th. At Martinsville
he
the
did.
Other day?
He finished 8th, and that set him at 19th in the standings right.
Excellent.
Now. And then Chris Buescher, I think, is 23rd at the moment, and a great young driver, a great young person in the sport, really represents the sport well, and build trucks on the weekends, and then used to race him when he was a young racer, really young. I mean, he's pretty young still at 23, 24 years of age, and 23rd in the standings. But AJ is a veteran and a really great road course driver and a short course driver. Martinsville, of course, is a short track, and I was kind of hoping they'd race in the snow the other day. And
yeah,
not Sunday too often.
Snow, right?
Yeah, it was the first time since '93 that they had to postpone a race because of snow.
Mark, has there been a turnaround? I mean, you and I talk about this all the time, all summer long. Your team has kind of struggled to make headway, but I know you had a great Daytona for both drivers, right? Fifth
correct.
And tenth
mm-hmm.
place for both drivers.
That's
we talked
correct,
then.
Yeah.
Has there been a turnaround for your team this year? What's been different?
Yeah, you're always searching for new things, and you're searching for more speed, and there's a lot of things that I've learned about the racing business, and I'm not really intricately involved, and certainly not intricately involved in the setup of the car or the aerodynamics or those components of the car. But, I mean, there's a lot of components that they go into an effective race day operation. And I mean, you change things. We're talking about football's a game of inches. Well, NASCAR is a game of 16ths of an inch. And sometimes if the right side of your car is pushed in just a 16th of an inch more, and those tolerances give you different airflow, which create different drafts or side forces, which create more speed and allow you to get more speed out of the engine, if, in fact, you have the horsepower that you think you have. There are tremendous dynamics, and when you talk about a football team being the whole greater than the sum of the parts, I mean, it's extremely applicable to the NASCAR situation as well, because you have to put the entire operation together, and what one part of the car is doing is going to affect other parts of the car as well.
You know, and this kind of comes up with the whole Deflategate and Tom Brady taking air out of the ball. We all know quarterbacks like the ball to a certain level. Now, in NASCAR, do the cars all have to be the same? How much wiggle room do you get in terms of how much you can change whatever it is to make your car a lot faster?
Yeah, 15 thousandths is usually the tolerance. Hmm. So that's like a 16th of an inch.
Gotcha.
So when you're looking at those components, now everybody tries to live in the gray area. So I've made a comparison before, and I'll make it again. It's like that offensive tackle lining up. His head's supposed to intersect the hip of the center, mm-hmm. but they keep backing up until the official's going to move them up. And that's exactly what happens in NASCAR. The tolerances are different, but guys always find a way to try to beat the system because now they use a laser component. Instead of, they used to call it the claw, so they'd bring this big claw down on top of the car, and there were tolerances, and they had these tolerance blocks. So if you can slide the block underneath the template, then it's out of tolerance. If you can't, then it's intolerance. And now they've got a laser component, but guys are still trying to find ways to beat that laser system and give themselves a little bit more of an advantage. And sometimes they do. And a lot of it's still in the driver's hands. I mean, they've got to be able to take the car that's there. They've got to be able to have a growth mindset and learn throughout the course of the race what's going to make the car better. And hopefully the last quarter of the race and the last 50 or 75 laps, they'll mm-hmm. be in contention.
Talking to Mark Kelso, former Bills safety color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, about what he does now working with JTG Daugherty Racing and the two race cars in the NASCAR circuit. I want to talk to you about football, Mark. You and I had a chance to talk a couple of minutes ago before you came on the air about the quarterbacks. Obviously, the Bills are talking quarterbacks. A lot of people have questions about Josh Allen. He's got a really mediocre, at best, completion percentage at Wyoming. But there's a lot to like about Josh Allen. He was the first name you brought up when we were talking quarterbacks.
Yeah, and just let me clarify here that I haven't studied any of these guys.
Okay.
I haven't watched any film. I mean, I've seen some throws that he made and the bowl game that he was in that he played in. At the end of the last season, I think I saw some throws there from that particular game. But I haven't studied any of these guys. I can't tell you much about them except some of the things that perhaps maybe I read in some articles that were written about them. And the thing I like about him is that he's got measurables, and I think he's got a tremendous work ethic. I mean, he grew up in Southern California, as I understand, in a farming community with a farming family and spent a lot of hours out in the fields tending the crops, and he really understands what it means to plant and harvest and the growth that he needs to have. And he has a great story. Boy, it would be great to see him have a really solid career in the NFL, if not a great career, because he didn't get recruited. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the word I'm looking for. Thanks, Donald. Mm-hmm. So he didn't get recruited coming out of college, and they asked him what his rank was as far as when you hear the ESPN top 100. He said he didn't have a ranking because no one really knew about him, and Wyoming was only one of a couple schools that gave him an opportunity even to play football, and he took great advantage of that. He's got great measurables. He's got a really strong arm. He certainly needs some growth and some tutoring and mentoring by some veteran guys and by a coaching staff that's going to give him an opportunity to utilize the gifts and abilities that he has. There's no question about that. He's not a polished guy. I don't think he's a day one starter when he comes in, but does he have that potential? And I know people have talked about Baker Mayfield, and you say if you really believe he's the guy, then draft him. But if for one reason or one minute there's something that you question about that situation, he doesn't have measurables. I'm not saying you need those, but look around the league and see the guys that don't have measurables that mm-hmm. have had any measure of success.
They're rarities.
You
They're
can
outliers.
Count them on one hand, yeah. Right? So and guys have had modest success, but guys, not too many guys have become franchise quarterbacks in this league and really led their team to the Super Bowl situation or won a Super Bowl. So you better be really sure about that pick, and teams might be, because I understand he's got great leadership capabilities. He's got a little bit of an abrasiveness as well, and sometimes top-flight quarterbacks or top-flight players have that as well. But you better be sure about it. I kind of feel like the Bills are in position to find the quarterback of the future for this franchise, and it seems like this is a quarterback-rich draft class, and I would think that they're making moves to put themselves in a position to get a guy that they feel is going to be the face of this team as far as the quarterback situation is concerned.
Mark, you have had a chance to talk to a lot of different experts, whether that be quarterback coaches, whether it be quarterback gurus, whatever the case may be. You've had a chance to speak to a lot of people over the years. You've obviously played in this game. Now, in terms of Josh Allen, his biggest flaw would be accuracy. We talk about his completion percentage, but we talk to some people that say don't really put that stuff together. But in terms of accuracy, when you see him and you watch him on film, he will make some throws that you're like, whoa, what was that? And it's almost like he's throwing it to his girlfriend up in the stands. Like, here's a ball for you. Keep that.
Perhaps he is.
So he might be. He might be. It's a gift for you. But when you talk to people, have they told you that you can actually make accuracy a lot better? Is it technique, or is that something that you just don't have as a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can. There are certain skills that you can make. You can gain some ground and improve on those skills when you get to the next level. But accuracy is a difficult one because, you can make up a little bit of ground, but can you make up big ground? I mean, that's for those quarterback gurus to decide, and guys that have coached in this league an awful long time. But the NFL is all about tight windows, and if a guy can throw to tight windows, he has a chance to be successful. Still might not even be successful, but you've got to be able to throw guys open. You've got to be an anticipation passer, and you've got to throw to tight windows. And if he has those components, which, again, I haven't seen that young man play, and so I don't really know if he has those components. I understand he has a really strong arm. But strength of arm is to me, I mean, certainly that helps you throw to tight windows if you have accuracy. But if you have a strong arm and you don't have the accuracy to go along with it, it can be problematic. And people talk about the deep ball, too. Well, first of all, I'll go on record as this. The guy with the strongest arm I ever saw in the NFL in my career was Gail Gilbert. It was because he could throw a BB from the 50-yard line from his knees. Hmm. And we played and practiced against that young man every week and consequently knew that we weren't going to play a quarterback that had a stronger arm than he had and never had a chance to play a significant amount of time in the NFL, but got a chance, I think, in San Diego when he left here. But he had a really strong arm. But, again, it doesn't matter if you can throw the ball 70 or 80 yards or 100 yards because in a go route, which is – probably the longest route that a quarterback will throw, that ball's still going to come down between 46, 49 yards because that's the length of field that the receiver can cover in the time the quarterback has to get rid of that football. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really matter to me how far they can throw, but the accuracy piece and the arm strength particularly for an out cut, if they're on the far hash and they're throwing a 10-yard out cut, that's about a 38, 40-yard throw. And they have to have that arm strength. But if they have the arm strength and can't put it on that outside shoulder right at the sidelines, it's going to get knocked down or worse yet, intercepted. So that's a key component of the decision-making process.
With Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, former Bills safety. Mark, you spent many years dealing with head injuries and trying to deal with helmet technology. The league owners yesterday passed a rule that kind of came out of nowhere, expanding penalties for contact involving helmets. It's different and actually more significant than the NCAA targeting rule. Under the change, a player gets a 15-yard penalty and is potentially ejected anytime he lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. Any thoughts on that? I know it's new. We're all trying to get our arms around it. By the way, it applies to everybody on the field, tacklers, ball carriers, quarterbacks, linemen. 15 yards, maybe an ejection if you initiate contact with a helmet. It's not even the crown of the helmet with the helmet. It seems awfully broad and awfully punitive to me. What do you think?
Well, and there certainly are certain situations when it's unavoidable to have helmet-to-helmet contact or helmet-to-body contact because you don't understand as a defensive player how that offensive player is going to move at the last moment before that contact is made. And I have a lot of experience with that, certainly trying to coach young players at the youth level or at the high school level in those situations because you teach them the right way to do it, then they get into a live situation and they don't have that muscle memory built to be able to conduct themselves the way that you intended to keep the head out of the game. But there's no question that I believe the game will continue to suffer as long as this concussion issue continues to rear its head, no pun intended, right? But so you've got to find ways to take it out of the game. I do agree with the Seattle Seahawks hawk tackling method. I think that has an opportunity to help take the head out of the game.
What's that?
When I teach young, it's you don't put your head across the body.
Right.
What you do in essence, this is the way I describe it to young players when you're trying to do a clinic, and I've done a lot of them, and I've taught young players to tackle, and they execute it well. Now, we don't do it in a live situation, but we do it without helmets. Mm-hmm. So they got to keep their head out of the way, because if they don't, they're going to get kneed in the head, and it's not going to be a pleasant thing, right? But the idea is to say, and I kind of make a baseball analogy. So when you're a baseball player, you want to swing at balls that are in the strike zone, right? You don't want to give a pitcher an opportunity to throw something outside the strike zone. Well, the strike zone to me is the near chest plate to the near thigh, right? Mm-hmm. So not across the body. It's the near. It's the closest one. And you're intending to put the front of your shoulder on one of those spots. So players say, well, we don't have anything. You've taken away everywhere to hit. That's why we're going to the knees. Hogwash. You can hit from the knee all the way up to the chest. That's two-thirds of the body. Just stay away from the head and don't go below the knee. And then use the front of your shoulder to hit. If you don't drop your pads to use the top of your shoulder, you're going to keep your head up. And I think that's what the NFL is saying. Look, you need to tackle with your head up. Don't drop it. Make sure your head is up the entire time. So if a guy's coming at me, a running back's coming, and he's going to drop his shoulder on me, in that situation, if I dip and try to make a tackle with my shoulder, probably going to make the helmet to body contact. So in that case, you just catch the player and then roll him and wrestle him down to the ground. Mm-hmm. But in other instances, you need to lead with that shoulder that's closest, and then you need to keep your head on the other side so it stays out of contact. And I think that's the way to do it. Can it be done? Yes. Is it going to take some muscle memory development from players that have been used to doing it another way? Absolutely, but you can do that without contact. As long as you're doing it, you've got to manage it in slower speeds, and then you've got to create drill work that enables you to try to execute it at full speed situations so that when you get into the game, you're used to that situation. And I think what they've done in Seattle, and you watch some of the things, it's not always perfect in a game-type situation. But they've created a situation that they can scaffold those guys and build that muscle memory while keeping the head out of contact.
Do you think they'll eject players? Like, how do you think the league's going to approach this?
I think so.
Do you?
I think because they are putting this rule into place, I think it's going to take some examples out there. And you're going to eject some guys from some games. And just so that you can set a precedent that we're serious about this. And so, yeah, I think they will inject some players.
What do you think?
I think the preseasons, they'll probably eject some guys, and I think they'll try to build that model to try to then create a film volume of guys that did things inappropriately and guys that did things within the new spirit of the rule. And it'll be difficult to eject players unless they strike with the crown of their helmet like they did in the past. And I'm not sure how they'll legislate it. I don't think they'll be overly aggressive during the season, but I think they will be aggressive in the preseason to try to set that precedence. And then as the season progresses again and guys have the opportunity to develop that muscle memory, then I think it becomes more aggressive. Or if a player does it one time, there needs to be some type of warning system to say, hey, if you hit like that again, you're going to be ejected from the game. But I do think they need to understand exactly what the rule implies and exactly how they're going to execute a tackle by eliminating that opportunity to drop their head and contact the body of the running back or receiver, whatever the case may be.
Mark, we got to cut you loose, but I do want to get a comment from you on your former teammate Jim Kelly, who today in New York City is having surgery again on his throat. He announced earlier this month his oral cancer had returned after being declared cancer-free a couple of years ago. Jim, 58 years old, diagnosed with cancer in 2013, had surgery then, surgery in 2014. Yesterday, Jill Kelly, on her Instagram account, posted this video of Jim talking about his surgery today.
Hey, everybody. Just getting ready to head to the airport, to head to New York City, and I just want to thank everybody for the prayers, not only from before, but for the surgery I have coming up. I know I can't do it without all you people behind me, all the fans. Especially all the fans in Buffalo. You guys are the best. Me and my family, as we head out, we know that you got our back, as I know that we only looked one place, and that's to the good Lord for everything we've received. And I know this is just a start of something great. But the bottom line is you make a difference today for someone who's fighting for tomorrow, and my tomorrow is coming tomorrow. So keep praying. Thank you all very much, and God bless.
Jim Kelly, the Bills Hall of Fame quarterback, with his video statement yesterday, audio statement yesterday, The one thing, and I know you're close with Jim, and I know you obviously played with Jim, Mark. The one lesson that I've learned from Jim Kelly's illness over the last 3 or 4 years is, I don't know how to even define it, the power of several people, an entire community in this case, kind of banding together to pray for him and to send him good wishes. It did have an impact, I think, on his first two issues in 2013 and 14. And why wouldn't it have an impact now? It has to, I would think.
Well, yeah, I would say unequivocally, I believe it has an impact. And I'm one of those guys. And there's a whole bunch of guys, that teammates that I played with, that from a spiritual perspective, I mean, they're in my daily prayer list. And Jim and Jill and their family are one of those groups. And certainly wish him the best and pray for wisdom and skill from the surgeons that are going to be performing the surgery today, and that his recovery would be a full recovery, and he'd be able to get back to doing what he's doing. But it just, I mean, he epitomizes the spirit of Western New York. And I mean, let me tell you a quick story. This isn't about Jim, but I talked to somebody in the racing business the other day, and when we had this conversation, and he says, his name was Dan Farrell. Some of the viewers might remember him from Tonawanda. And I said, he said, are you the Mark Kelso from the Bills? And I said, well, yeah, I am that person. He said, well, I grew up in Tonawanda. And he starts talking about growing up, and he was a high school student during the 90s. And every time he made a comment about the team, he referred to them as we. Like he would say, well, we were at the games, and we won this, and we did that. And at the end he said, oh, sorry about that. I didn't mean we, I meant me. And I said, no, it is we. And that's the beautiful thing about Western New York. It's we. Everybody feels a part of it. Everybody feels a part of Jim's process. I think they feel the pain that the Kelly family is going through, knowing that he has to endure this process once again. And they're going to feel the elation when God gives them the opportunity to beat this and come out successfully from this surgery. So it just epitomizes the spirit that we have here in Western New York. And there's no question there's not a better place to be in the country than right here. And I would agree with that, and everybody certainly expresses best wishes to Jim, and
sure,
the East Aurora community put together a card and as well to express their appreciation and their well wishes to the Kelly family during this time.
And you get to stay in town this weekend for Easter, right? No racing this weekend?
No,
good for you. I'm
no
getting
racing
out of town this weekend.
You are. Yeah. Where are you going? I can't imagine where you'd be going.
I'm going to the Final Four, buddy.
Well,
Donald's rooting against me.
Well,
he's rooting
against
Michigan.
Shame on you. Shame on you, Donald, because now.
You've met Coach Beilein.
He's great. He's great. And I know the Loyola story is fabulous as well. So here's what I hope, like I do for most football games. Let's hope it comes down to the last shot of the game, and let's hope it's a great play that is the result of the victory.
I don't know if he wants that.
It's a good play that results in a victory and not somebody making a mistake. Because,
okay.
Sometimes those young players have to live with those things, and that can be difficult. But I hope it's a great contest. It looks like it appears
sure.
like it will be.
It's a Final Four.
Hey,
it's going to
be
fun.
It'll
thanks,
be fun.
Mark. Good to see you. Come around more
great.
Often.
Yeah, I'll try to do that, but it's tough when you're down
Carolina,
south.
Carolina, yeah. You come back for the weather.
It's been a long winter.
Oh,
needs to end up here, right?
No kidding. About a month ago. Thanks. Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, and, of course, former Bills safety joining us in studio. Donald and I back with more in a moment. We'll get back to our discussion about which quarterback
about
would
Michigan.
You trade up for.
No.
Which quarterback would you trade up for if you were the Bills? Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550. And toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
All right.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more John Murphy, Donald Jones. Coming up at 2, Lorenzo Alexander joins us in studio. Lots of time to talk about our topic today, but it was good to get Kelso back in here.
It seems like it's
don't
been
you
forever.
Miss him? His take on the helmet hits, I never would have got there. Without, he started talking about really the target zone
the target
for tackles.
Zone, yeah.
What do you call it, the Seahawks?
So the Seahawks, they put in this technique where you've always been taught when you're going in to tackle somebody, if we're coming at an angle, let's just say we're both running at an angle towards the sideline, you're always taught to put your head in front of the person's body to basically cut them off. The Seahawks basically switched that up and said, now you're going to hit on the backside, and so that you take your head out of the equation and you basically just wrestle the guy to the ground. Now, people complain about everything. So you're going to have players that say, well, now you're going to have more ankle injuries or knee injuries or whatever the case may be. And that's just the world we live in, to be honest with you. But I think that was a very good technique, and I think you're starting to see players do that a lot more in the NFL, try to take their head out of the equation. The hard part is when you're coming straight on, downhill, you get a Leonard Fournette coming downhill. He is not trying to shake you or anything. He is trying to lower his shoulder, lower his head on you. And if you are a DB or a linebacker, whomever, you're really going to do the same thing, because if you don't, you're going to get run over, and nobody wants to get run over. And so you lower your shoulder and you lower your head, and you'll get that helmet-to-helmet contact. And so I think that right there is going to be the that's going to be one of the plays that people are going to talk about, and you're going to see it. You see it all the time. Running back and whoever on defense, head on, lowering your shoulder and head, who gets ejected? Do we eject both of them? Is there a warning system in place like Kelso was talking about? There's a lot of and he started to talk about the preseason. It's going to be interesting to see how they're actually enforcing this in the preseason. I think we know they go into the preseason wanting to enforce certain rules. And he talked about trying to get some film on it, and that's probably what they will try to do. And once we get into the season, they'll back off of it a little bit. But there will be a lot of different instances where you get straight-on helmet-to-helmet collisions because you have a running back and whomever that's trying to make that tackle.
I thought that was the other amazing thing that Kelso brought up, that I guess he has I knew that they would probably enforce it hard in preseason. Mm-hmm. But he's right. They'll enforce it hard. They'll have a couple of ejections, and they'll have a volume of tape to show video. Players yeah. after that. This is a good hit. This is not a good hit. This is what we're talking about.
And we know
that's how it'll go this summer.
We know in training camp. And they're probably already putting together tape, but then when we get into preseason, they're going to enforce it. And we know in training camp, they bring the refs in.
Yeah.
And they start to talk about rule changes. That's one of the reasons why they bring them in, to speak to the teams about the different rule changes. And this is something that's going to come up, you know, the helmet to helmet. And you're going to get a lot of guys on the defense that they're going to have a lot of questions. And guys will probably be upset about it. And they're like, "What? Can you show me what I'm supposed to do when right. a running back lowers his shoulder on me or lowers his head on me? Am I supposed to stay high and just get run over?" And the refs will have to explain that. But, you know, they're going to have a lot of tape to be able to explain that to these guys.
Great to have Kelso in here to talk about that. We thank Mark Kelso, who's still doing his other job with the racing team while he's up here for a couple of days. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour on our show, Lorenzo Alexander will join us. We've got plenty of time to talk about our Twitter poll question. All right, you want to trade up for a quarterback? Many of you do. Which one? Which quarterback you want to trade up for? We're going to get deep into that in the next hour, including your phone calls. We got lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. John Murphy, Donald Jones, going to take a break. Be back in a moment. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update comes from One Bills Drive. More news late yesterday, early this morning from the NFL owners' meetings. The owners passed an unexpected rule that expands the penalty for contact involving helmets, more significant, more far-reaching than the NCAA targeting rule. Under the NFL change approved yesterday, player will be penalized 15 yards and potentially ejected anytime he lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. It applies to tacklers, ball carriers, linemen. It will take the place of a previous rule that limited the penalty to contact with the crown of the helmet. It is more severe, more far-reaching than the NCAA's targeting rule. More discussion on this coming up today on the show. Former Bills Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly is undergoing surgery in New York City today, and his battle against cancer continues. The surgery is scheduled to start this morning. Kelly announced earlier this month that his oral cancer had returned after he was declared cancer-free 2 years ago. Kelly, 58 years old, diagnosed with cancer in his jaw in 2013, had surgery then, and another surgery in March 2014. Kelly undergoing surgery today. Johnny Manziel's return to pro football may be still a long shot, but he's working it. The former first-round pick threw at a scouting showcase for the second time in as many weeks yesterday. He was the quarterback at Texas A&M's Pro Day. Manziel met with the Patriots before and after his participation at Texas A&M's Pro Day, according to the Boston Herald. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network says New England was not the only team to speak with the man formerly known as Johnny Football. He is getting set to play in a spring league, Johnny Manziel's, and may even have an option to play in Canada in the CFL. But right now, Manziel's still out of pro football. And the Buffalo Sabres getting set to showcase Casey Mittelstadt. He officially signed his entry-level contract yesterday. He practices with the Sabres today and makes his NHL debut tomorrow night at home against the Detroit Red Wings. Face-off 7 o'clock. Meantime, Kyle Okposo has been named the Sabres nominee for the Bill Masterton Trophy for perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. Sabres and Detroit tomorrow night. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio inside the AdPro Sports Training Center on another beautiful day in Orchard Park.
Yeah.
I'm not going to complain about weather every day, but come on, man. Even Mark Kelso, I mean, it's been rough.
It's been rough, and it's time to ease up a little bit.
A little bit.
Just some sunny days.
A little warmth, please.
60, 65. Can we just get some signs of something here? Now, talking of Johnny Manziel.
Yes, sir.
You think he'll get another shot?
No, I don't think he will. Do you?
I don't. I think there are too many kids coming out of college, and teams will give those guys a shot before Johnny Manziel
gets
another shot. I think his best bet, to be honest with you, is to go up to Canada and just do your thing up there and become a star and show that you can actually be a very good player. Different league, but you can be a very good player. And I think the biggest thing for him is it's really twofold, because even on the field, he just did not look like an NFL quarterback when he was playing the games that he did play in. But he needs to show he can play on the field. He needs to show he can keep it together off the field, especially if he's playing good on the field, because, you know, he goes up there, he's going to be a superstar up there.
In Canada.
Yeah, he'll be a superstar. And can he keep it together with all of the attention that he would get up there in Canada? That's what teams down here would want to see. So, you know, to see him throwing and all of that stuff, I mean, I guess it's a good thing for him, but I think ultimately he needs to go head up to Canada.
Yeah, I think maybe a year after a year in Canada, and this is, I think, what you're saying, then maybe he gets a chance again in the NFL, but not before that. And sure, teams will talk to him. Sure, how are you doing? How do you feel? What's your plan?
Right.
What are you working on?
What are you working on? Yeah. I'd say this, and I'll throw it out there, and people will respond how they want to respond. But this league, if Johnny Manziel gets another shot in the NFL before Colin Kaepernick gets a shot in the NFL, it would be a lot of upset people.
You would be one of them.
I would be one of them.
Tell me why.
Because this is a guy who's been in trouble off the field multiple times.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who has done nothing in this league on the field.
Yeah.
Nothing. You know, at least Colin Kaepernick has some success in this league.
Right.
And so I would definitely be one of those guys if Johnny Manziel got another shot in training camp before Colin Kaepernick.
I understand that. I would agree. I would say neither one of them to me is a very interesting quarterback prospect,
right,
in terms of a guy who can help a team. But I think I know your point. I see your point. I think you're right. It would be upsetting and potentially damaging if Manziel got a shot before Kaepernick did.
Yeah.
I really agree with that. All right. Telephone lines are open. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. Yesterday, our Twitter poll: what should the Bills do in the first round? And about two-thirds of you, 62%, said they should trade up, get a premium quarterback. So second part of the question today on Twitter and on the telephone line, our Twitter poll. Okay, so which quarterback is worth trading up for? Which quarterback would you trade up for? Who do you like? Right now, 45% of you say UCLA's Josh Rosen. 23% of you say Sam Darnold from USC. 11% say Josh Allen from Wyoming. 21% say none of them. Don't trade up. What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550, the number to call. Would love to talk to you about this. Got a lot of time this hour to talk about it. And a lot of Twitter response, Donald, to this question, too, about Baker Mayfield. People wondering why we left him out. We only have four. I wanted one option to be none. I wouldn't trade up for any of them. It came down to Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen. I think most draft projections, if I read them right, have Josh Allen a little bit higher up than Baker Mayfield. Am I right?
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's not on your list. Maybe not on your draft projection. Maybe the other way. I get that. Make no mistake about it, folks. We have no influence over the Bills' decision, who they like, who they don't like, who they're going to talk to, who they're going to bring in for their quarterback visits. So if you want to say Baker Mayfield, come on in. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You know, Twitter is great because people just go off the chart, you know. Baker Mayfield, 3 or 4 exclamation parts, that sort of thing. We're not anti-Baker Mayfield. You like Baker Mayfield.
I like Baker Mayfield. Yeah, I like his attitude that he brings. I think his attitude can rub people the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna have maybe half the league that love it, the other half of the league that don't like it. And so that's something, and who knows where the Bills will actually fall in that. I think the Bills are in a position where, to be honest with you, they need to like all four of those guys and really like those guys. Because you don't know how far up you can get to really get anyone. Who knows if they can get up there to number two, that they might only be able to get to number six or something like that. Yep. So you need to really like all four of those guys, so hopefully they do.
So that's the question today. If you want to trade up, want to make the big trade, get rid of some draft picks and move up in the draft, who are you moving up for? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550 is the number to call. And let's see if I can get a call on the air, because then people want to talk about this. We know every day we laugh about it, but it's true, Donald. People mm-hmm. want to talk about the quarterback. I get that. All right, here's a call from Jim in Lockport. Jim, can I get you up? Jim, there you are. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. How was it?
Good afternoon. Good. Thank you.
Afternoon, I guess. Yeah.
Yep.
1 o'clock.
I did want to talk about Mayfield, but I don't want to be dumped off the radio until I address Mr. Jones over there.
Okay, well, how much time do you need? Let's do it that way, Jim.
Well, I just want to talk about...
You got 2 minutes. I'm going to dump you in 2 minutes. Tick, 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 tick.
I want to talk about John Beilein.
Oh, okay, you got 5 minutes.
Oh, look, he just gave you extra time.
Get up to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
John is part of the Bills Mafia. He's one of us. He's from our area. Now, I can understand if Mr. Jones was a Yankee hater because he wants to be anti what everybody else is or what the majority people are. But when you look at the Beilines, they are pillars of our community. Going back to Mama Josephine, she was a sweetheart. And all the Beilines have just been outstanding citizens, and they're all part of the Bills Mafia.
I'm going to take you off that topic only to say this, Jim, and Don, I've told you this. Mm-hmm. Every Bills game, I will get a post-game text from Coach John Beilein. Mm-hmm. Many times very critical, you know, like what the heck was that? But he cares. I've had his players come to me in the past say, you realize in the fall we don't practice at 1 o'clock on Sundays if the Bills are playing. But, Jim, your other point, what did you want to say about Baker? And I appreciate your points. Donald knows this. You're kind of kidding, right?
Yeah, I'm kidding. I hate on John because because it's John.
I mean, because I'm a target. I'm a big target, yeah.
Hey, if he – I
backed out a little bit and joined the gang and be part of us. The train hasn't pulled away yet.
No, there's room on the bandwagon for you, Donald.
Well,
maybe Saturday night at 8:30.
There's never going to be a bandwagon.
Maybe Saturday night at 8:30. You know, I'll get you some Michigan gear. How about that?
Baker Mayfield, just figuring to move up and get that Giants pick is probably going to take too much of a king's ransom. And if Darnold does fall to number two, everything you're reading, that's when the Giants would jump on Darnold. So I'm looking at it that I wouldn't mind at all having Baker Mayfield. My fear is that the Dolphins would take him. And I wouldn't want to be playing against him with the Dolphins.
Hmm.
After having Tyrod Taylor, with his shortcomings, let's face it, it was exciting watching that guy play.
You know, I wouldn't – thanks, Jim, for calling. For the record, 3 minutes, I said two. But I wouldn't – I don't think you draft a player, especially in a premium selection, you know, first five picks in the first round – you don't draft a player based on what you think somebody else might do. You got to have a deep conviction, and especially if you're talking about quarterbacks, that this is our guy. And for the Bills to get up there, they're going to have to spend some of that draft capital. So they better feel like it's their guy. I don't think they move up to get Mayfield or anybody else thinking, we better get him or else Miami gets him or the Jets get him. You know what I'm saying, Donald?
I don't think this regime, the right motivation for it.
This
regime won't make that decision at all based on any factors like that. Because that's we always talk about you don't want to get into chase mode. That is truly chase mode. You know, because, oh, man, the Dolphins are one pick ahead of us. And you might hear on draft night, oh, the Dolphins are about to get up there to try to get so-and-so. And so, oh, we got to get up there before the Dolphins. You can't get into that type of ball game because you'll find yourself giving up your entire draft.
Yeah.
And the Dolphins are bluffing.
Which quarterback's worth trading up for yesterday? 62% of you on Twitter told us that the Bills should package up draft picks and go get one of the premium quarterbacks. Okay, which one? That's our discussion today. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. What's the matter, Donald?
I got this tweet that says, Bills will take zero quarterbacks, fill all holes with draft picks, and then offseason make Matt Ryan the highest paid quarterback with all the cap space they have. Hmm. I highly doubt that the Falcons will let Matt Ryan out of that door.
Right. You can dream, I guess.
Yeah, I highly doubt that.
Chad in Lancaster. Go ahead, Chad. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Nothing.
Just want to talk about a little Baker Mayfield action, just because, I mean, this guy, you know, playing in the Big 12 or whatever, it's whatever. But you don't throw for over 45 touchdowns and only six interceptions or whatever he had by mistake, you know. I don't care about the size. I don't care about any of that stuff. I think if you guys want a true face of the franchise, you got to have some fire. I know he's got some off-field stuff or whatever, but, I mean, you grow up as you get older. Obviously, the kid's 21 years old. I think people forget about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think if you really want your face of the franchise and really want a guy that can, I don't know, motivate everybody, I think Baker Mayfield's your guy.
Okay. Pretty strong case. Here's another Baker Mayfield fan on Twitter. This is the one I was thinking of. I couldn't find it. Thomas on Twitter says, about our Twitter list, why is Allen, Josh Allen, on the list and not Mayfield? Anyone who trades up for Allen should be fired immediately. Some fans just look for the next guy to be fired.
Yeah.
I've learned that over the last couple of years. Some fans, following sports, following a team, is all about who needs to be fired. Sometimes it's me. All right. But people always got to have the
– fans need to be fired from being a fan.
No, you can do whatever you want. Some fans, though, that's it. It's finding the boogeyman. Who needs to go? He's got to go. You know, they called a run instead of a pass. He's got to go.
There are a lot of scouts, like you've talked to, a lot of scouts, not just the Mel Kuypers of the world. There are a lot of scouts that really like Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's gonna go high. And the kid, you've seen it last year with Pat Mahomes. I mean, the Chiefs traded up all the way up to get Pat Mahomes. You see it every year with a guy like Josh Allen. They feel like they can develop that guy. He has all the tools, all the measurables to be a good quarterback in this league. And all it takes is for us to develop this kid into a great quarterback. And I mean, I say it all the time. Look, it's funny. I'll go to, like, some football camps in certain places, and I'm out there and I'm coaching the kids, and I'll go and I'm talking to the other coaches, and I'm like, man, there's just no talent out here right now. And it's hard to teach with no talent. It's hard to teach when the kid has no talent because you're like, how come you can't just take this one step? Just take the one step. It's that simple. You just can't do it for me. Coaches, now, when you go to a camp and this kid has all types of talent, it's like, man, I can develop that right there into a very good player. All you got to do is now hone in on the technique and different things like that. But he has the initial talent, and that's what you have with Josh Allen. He has the talent. He has the size, the tools that they feel like they can develop into a great quarterback in this league, and that's why he's going to be drafted in the top five, top six.
Let's hear from you. Which quarterback is worth it for the Bills to trade up to get? About two-thirds of you yesterday told us that they should trade up, get a premium quarterback. All right, which one? Give us a call. Line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I'm Josh Allen, who is, it's been said, and it'll be said some more, he is a polarizing figure in this draft. Some people love him. Some people will say, why is he in your poll and not Baker Mayfield? He's been at the top. You know, Mel Kiper is a bit of a goof. We know that, but he's been doing it for a while. And he's been the number one pick in Mel Kiper's mock draft.
Yes.
He has been for three times.
Yeah.
Mel Kiper today with his mock draft, he has the Browns number one going with Josh Allen, Wyoming. Now, Mel Kiper, you know, you got to believe after all these decades, he's got sources, he's got scouts, he's got team personnel he talks to who say, Josh Allen,
right.
Cleveland likes Josh Allen. Let me just read you what he wrote on ESPN.com today about Josh Allen and the Browns taking a number one overall. No change here from my first two mock drafts. The Browns are zeroing in on a quarterback with the first overall pick, and Allen has crushed the pre-draft process. He goes on to say the addition to Tyrod Taylor allows Josh Allen, who is the most raw of the top quarterback prospects in this class, to sit on the sideline and adjust to the speed of the NFL. Cleveland does not have to play Josh Allen immediately. That makes sense. Is that going to happen? I don't know, but Mel Kiper now three consecutive mock drafts has Josh Allen going number one overall to Cleveland. And he kind of, in a paragraph, he kind of spells out why he thinks that way. He's crushed the pre-draft process, done well at the combine, done well at his pro day last week. I'm sure he's had different sessions with other teams so far. You might not like him. You might look at the 56, 57% completion percentage and say, how can that guy be the best quarterback of this group? Well, NFL scouts think differently than you do, than I do, than many of these people who put together these mock drafts. Mel Kiper, I believe, even though I'm not a huge fan, Donald, I got to believe he has talked to NFL people. He's talked to scouts, as have I, who have a lot of good things to say about Josh Allen. It's not just people making stuff up.
Yeah, the guys on TV, and I always talk about the Mel Kipers and, you know, Daniel Jeremiah's and the draft gurus who will say certain things about guys. And there are certain things that they'll say that's just like, whoa, where did that come from? I mean, how could you just talk about a guy like that? That just came out of left field. But for the most part, they are getting their intel or information from scouts, from teams.
Yeah.
You know, and
maybe
it's
agents.
Right, from agents as well. Exactly. Now, they are also smart enough to report most things accurately. And we know it's an agent's job to really put different things out there. We know the teams like to put out things that might be false because of different reasons. But when you have multiple scouts on multiple teams saying, look, we really like this guy because of everything that we can all see and the measurables, that is real. And then when you have a Hugh Jackson come out and talk about at the pro day, how he looked at the pro day, that is real. These teams really like Allen. And the Browns, I believe, really like Allen. And I think after Sam Darnold's pro day, everybody was like, man, Sam Darnold is number one. But I think once you got to Josh Allen's pro day, it was like, whoa, all right, hold on. Let's kind of backtrack a little bit because the Browns might really like this guy. And they might go ahead and pull a trigger on this guy because of all of his tools and all of his measurables.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Which quarterback is worth trading up for if you're the Buffalo Bills? Is it Josh Allen? Is it Sam Darnold? Is it Josh Rosen? Is it none of the above? Is it somebody else? Is it Baker Mayfield?
And this is why when we talk about the Bills trying to trade up to get to number two, if you're the Giants, why would you trade out of that spot? Because if you're the Giants, you're going to sit there for two reasons. Number one, maybe you like a Sam Darnold. And if the Browns go ahead, and this is why you let the thing play out, if the Browns go ahead and take Josh Allen and Sam Darnold sitting there and you like him, we might as well take this kid.
Yeah.
We're still sitting here. That's why you don't trade out of that spot right away. And if you're the Giants, because of two reasons, for the reason I just said and the reason of the price is going to continue to go up on teams that actually want to get up there. The closer you get to draft night and on draft night, teams will start to offer you more and more and more because they're getting more and more and more desperate the closer we get to draft night. So the Giants, I don't even see trading back really until we get to draft night.
Let's take a call. Here is Bill in Rochester. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. Thank you, Bill.
Okay. I have a point here. First of all, I don't think the Bills should trade up from 12 and 22. And the question I have is, what is a franchise quarterback? That's what everybody's done, looking for, a franchise quarterback. I think Brady was drafted in fifth round.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to hang up and let you guys tell me what is a franchise quarterback, because it's a guess. That no matter what you go or where you pick, if you hold to what you got down in McCarron and Peterman, how do you know they won't be your franchise quarterback?
Yeah, well, you don't. That's an interesting question, Bill. You don't know with certainty that they won't be. How would you define a franchise quarterback? I would define it as a starter for close to a decade would be a franchise quarterback, a guy who is good enough to start for 8 to 10 or more years and good enough to help your team be perpetual contenders for playoffs and deep into the playoffs. That's how I would define it. Some might define it differently. Donald, do you have a definition? What is your franchise quarterback?
My franchise quarterback, a definition. A guy who you have no reservations in putting a game on his shoulders. A guy who represents everything that you represent as an organization, as a community.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who can win you the big games in the fourth quarter. A guy who is a leader in the face of your franchise, I mean, all of those different things. And there's probably more that I can add into there, but all of those things embody a franchise quarterback. It's a guy who can win games, that's one thing. A guy who you believe in and the entire team believes in, like an Aaron Rodgers. As long as we have Aaron Rodgers, we'll be okay. I mean, he's a franchise quarterback. But I think it's also a guy who is a leader in the locker room, a guy who really represents the organization and represents that city and embraces that, a guy who's out there in the community. I think that all of that is a franchise quarterback.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Bill, thanks for asking that question. We're going to get back to more of your questions, more of your comments. Lots of time to talk today. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-5550. So if you believe the Bills should use their draft picks and move up, get one of these potential franchise quarterbacks, one of these premium quarterbacks, which one is worth it? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-5550. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander stopping by in a half hour, so make sure you stick around for that. Coming back with more from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back on this Wednesday. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you from our beautiful studios, the One Buffalo Studios, here until 3 o'clock today. Lorenzo Alexander coming by at 2.
Zodo.
We got some stuff to talk to Lorenzo about, including these helmet hits, the new rule. We're going to hear from Commissioner Goodell in a couple of minutes on that. We want to ask Lorenzo about this trade up, right? I mean, he's a player. You have an opinion on that.
Yeah, he'll have
the catch rule.
He's had an opinion in the past. He'll probably have an opinion on a lot of these rule changes.
You might have an opinion on the Final Four.
Well, I expect him to have an opinion that will go against mine. And it's all good. Lorenzo, I'm sure you're listening right now. If you're listening, you bring it on.
Let's take a few more phone calls. If you're going to move up and draft a quarterback, if you're the Buffalo Bills, if you're a Bills fan, which one is your target? Who would you go for? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-5550. Here's a call from Jim in Buffalo. Good afternoon, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, Jim.
I was wondering about Mason Rudolph. I heard about him at the beginning of the draft, and I haven't heard anything more. I heard he's the size of a house, and he's pretty good. What's the hang-ups with Buffalo and Mason Rudolph?
There's a hang-up. I know who's a big fan, Thurman Thomas, another Cowboy from Oklahoma State. I don't think there's a hang-up, Donald, more that it may not be premium first-round value for Mason Rudolph, right? A guy who might be better suited at 22, maybe at the earliest, or second round even. What do you think, Donald Jones?
I think Mason Rudolph, from talking to different people, is more of a project than the top four. Let's just say that. He's more of a project than the top four. I think, even to be honest with you, you see Mason Rudolph ahead of Lamar Jackson, but then in some mock drafts, you'll see Lamar Jackson ahead of Mason Rudolph, because at least Lamar Jackson can come in right now and make some plays, throwing the ball and with his legs. Mason Rudolph, you hear when you talk to scouts and different things like that, they talk about him in the second round.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Jim. Speaking of Lamar Jackson, a couple of tweets. Mel Marley 4 tweets in, Lamar Jackson, how do you forget the Heisman quarterback? We didn't forget him. Didn't forget him at all. There's only a couple of spots on the Twitter poll. I don't know that Lamar Jackson is regarded as one of the top four quarterbacks in this draft. Maybe in the top six, Donald. Mm-hmm. Is he a first rounder? Is Lamar Jackson again, you get ripped on Twitter, and is Lamar Jackson, are you certain that Lamar Jackson will go in the first round? He probably will, right?
I think he will. I think somebody will take a shot on him later in the first round.
Yeah.
A team that has their quarterback right now, that you can redshirt Lamar Jackson. He's a guy who you know that he could come in and make some plays for you right now. So if your starting quarterback goes down, this guy can come in and still possibly win you some games. But you know also coming in that he is not ready to be a full-time starter in this league. He has a lot to learn about playing quarterback in this league. And so, you know, you're not going to take him in the top 10 of the draft, but I think you could see him come off the board somewhere in the late half of the first round.
Could the Bills draft Lamar Jackson? Sure they could. Would they draft him with the 12th or higher? I think that's unlikely, don't you?
I think it's unlikely. I think that they would take him at 22. If they wanted Lamar Jackson and he was still sitting there at 22 and they hadn't picked up a quarterback yet, then they might think about it at that point. But I think if they decided to sit there at 12, they would go, and all those four quarterbacks are – or not they decided to sit there, but they really couldn't find a trade partner. Let's just say that. They can't find a trade partner to get up into the top five, yeah, which could happen. and they have to stay there at number 12, I think they would go in a different direction and go linebacker, wide receiver, something like that, and then think about quarterback again at 22. And at that point, maybe it's Lamar Jackson.
Thanks for your call, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-552-550. Patrick calling from his cell phone. Go ahead, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hey, John, I love the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think they should draft none of them in the first round. Historically, most of these quarterbacks are hit and miss. And this is a quarterback class that's really, really deep. And there's somebody that's flying under the radar, Chad Knoff. Probably never heard of him, quarterback at Princeton. Won the Bushnell Award. He was the number one offensive rookie of the year in the Ivy League. Like a 73%, 72% completion percentage over his career. Really good, good player. They wanted him to go to the SEC, and he said, no, I went to Princeton. Smart, good release, 6'4", 210, needs a little weight. Because I think they should draft some linebackers with their first two picks.
Yeah, they might be better off looking at linebackers. That's interesting. I mean, I was just reading about Chad Knoff when you mentioned him. 73% completion percentage. You know, there's a difference between getting those completed passes against, Dartmouth and Brown than there is against somebody in the SEC. But certainly, he's a senior. He had great numbers at Princeton, and I'm sure it sounds like a guy who'd probably wind up in somebody's camp this summer, Donald, huh?
You know, and this goes back to Daniel Jeremiah and what he said last week and completion percentage. Obviously, you want a guy to be able to make all of the throws. And I don't know what type of offense Knoff played in, but we all know that these college offenses throw a lot of slants and bubble screens and things like that. And that inflates your completion percentage when most of the time you're throwing the ball 5 yards away from you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what type of offense he played in. I haven't been able to watch him on film. But
you didn't
I'll
watch
just
much
say,
Princeton?
No, I haven't watched much Princeton.
Nor have I.
But I don't see him being anywhere in the top four rounds of the draft.
I'll tell you what, I got the Our Lad's Guide to the NFL Draft, their most recent newsletter dealing with different prospects. They have 28 quarterback prospects listed for this year's draft, including the juniors. They have Baker Mayfield number one, by the way. And the Princeton quarterback is not on there, not among the top 28. So if he goes to a camp, even, that might be a surprise.
Yeah.
And again, Our Lads doesn't have all the answers, but they have a pretty comprehensive list of the top prospects. He's not even among the top 28 in the country. Here is Pete calling from Hamburg. Pete, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing okay. Thanks, Pete.
So I don't feel that any of the quarterbacks are worth moving up for. It's
okay.
Not because of the talent. It's because of what it would do to the depth of the team by giving up those draft picks. If you look at last year's four championship game quarterbacks, really three of them are not franchise quarterbacks. It was the team around them and the system around them. And I feel that what you would lose in those future picks they would give up or this year's picks, if it was similar to what the Jets gave up, it would really devalue what the team is trying to achieve. Would I want any of those four? Absolutely. Could one fall to 12? Could, but to give up the 22nd, 2 seconds, 2/3, or whatever it would take, I really feel there's some quality players that you would lose. If you look at, you guys have been talking about the 2014 draft with McCarron, you look at the number 12 pick that year, it was Beckham Jr. You look at the 13th pick, Aaron Donald. And you would lose out on a player like that. So
sure.
I think the Bills are really focusing on the best player, and I agree with that strategy.
All right, that's a really good point, Pete, and that the most compelling argument not to trade up. But your point about last year's championship game quarterbacks, can we agree that last year was a bit of a little different with the guys who wound up playing quarterback for, as you said, three of those four teams? I mean, it doesn't usually happen that way. Last year it did. Does it happen that way typically?
No.
It does not, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Your chances are enhanced if you have a franchise quarterback, right? Would you agree with that, Pete? Not a guarantee, but you got a better chance of playing in that conference championship game or Super Bowl if you've got a quarterback, a bona fide franchise quarterback.
Yeah, a bona fide guy.
You look at somebody like Bortles. Look at that team around him, and that's what got them there, not Bortles. You look at someone like Dan Marino, amazing quarterback. Never won a Super Bowl. But if he would have had the talent around him, a little more talent, he could have done that. So I feel it's as important as the quarterback position is, especially a franchise, the other 51 players in the depth chart override that value in my eyes.
Yeah, I think you're kind of on an island there. I don't think a lot of people agree with that. What do you think, Donald?
No, it's interesting because he talks about Bortles, and Bortles, big physical guy, had the arm strength coming out of college. Jaguars took him very high. Where did he go, number three overall, something like that? He went very high.
Was that high?
But he hasn't yeah, it was three. He hasn't really, even this year, even with the team going that far, I mean, they made an emphasis on running the ball. They did not want to put the game in his hands. And I think it showed even in the second half of that game against the Patriots. They did not want to put the game into his hands. And they went off of his size, the measurables and all of that stuff coming out of college. And I think it just shows you that this stuff is not an exact science. And the fact that they actually picked up the option just shows you, you know, they're going to play with him again this year and see how it plays out. But they're probably in the next couple of years be looking for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they drafted him, they felt like they had their franchise quarterback. And once they got into their first season, it was like, uh-oh, we don't. It doesn't look like that. But we'll give him another year. It doesn't look like it this year. We'll give him another year. He's still throwing interceptions. But they the one thing that they kept on doing was putting the entire team around him. So I can really see the argument on both sides of this thing. Not every sure. team has a bona fide franchise quarterback, and teams can make it into the playoffs without having one. You can even win a Super Bowl without having
– Well, let's talk about that for a second and the caller's point about last year's conference championship teams. The Eagles won the Super Bowl with a backup, not a premium mm-hmm. draft pick quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But they got that far because of Carson Wentz.
Right.
They wouldn't have been in that position if Carson Wentz had not played excellent for, what, 3 months of last year's season, mm-hmm. 3.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of pokes holes in that argument. I would not want to play – I would not want to count on a team getting deep into the playoffs on a regular basis without a really good quarterback. I think you're an outlier. It doesn't happen
yeah,
that often.
You want to have – You definitely want to have a franchise quarterback. But I think you also need to put a team around that franchise
sure
quarterback.
You do. Yeah.
So
and I acknowledge the cost that the caller pointed out. If they move up, and that's why we put that, obviously, in the Twitter poll, none. You know, which quarterback would you make the move up for? We put the option out there, none, because they might not be worth it. As the caller, I think, very eloquently put, might not be worth giving up all those prospects, you know, the Aaron Donalds and that type of guy in order to get that franchise quarterback, right? I acknowledge that. I think mm-hmm. we do both. There's a cost to be paid.
There is a cost to be paid, and that's why you have to have the real conviction on whoever that draft pick is. You really have to love that guy because you're going to be giving up and passing up on some good talent in the draft. And whatever team trades up to get a quarterback, they're going to pass up on potential Hall of Fame players
yeah.
to get this quarterback because the quarterback position is so important.
We're going to break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the new helmet hit rule in the NFL. The commissioner had some things to say about that today. We'll hear that, talk more about that, maybe even take a phone call on that when we return to the show. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Coming to you live from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. Lorenzo Alexander stopping by at 2. The NFL owners' meetings beginning to break up down there in Orlando, Florida. Late yesterday, the owners passed a rule that kind of was unexpected. They've expanded penalties for contact involving helmets. It's more far-reaching than the NCAA targeting rule. Under the change in the NFL, a player will be penalized 15 yards and maybe ejected anytime he lowers his head to initiate contact and initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. Roger Goodell talked about it at the news conference in Orlando, Florida this morning. Here's what he said.
Some of the issues that we deal with respect to how we continue to make the game safer, you are all aware of the fact that we spent a great deal of time, had a lot of discussion over the last several days, including this morning, on how we implement the lowering the head. Our focus is how to take the head out of the game and make sure that we're using the helmet as protection and is not being used as a weapon. And that's the core of what we're focused on. And I think we made a tremendous amount of progress in that this week. There's a great deal of communication, education that still needs to take place. We'll be doing that over the next 90 days, including going to each club, having a players, coaches, medical staff, all hands on deck at each club to be able to go through the changes and make sure everyone's fully aware of them and the basis for those changes.
Roger Goodell on the new helmet rule. And Donald, I guess that's good, right? They're going to include education. They have to. I'm going to get Lorenzo's take on this, but they have to let the players know what the deal is now.
Yeah, you can't just start to enforce a rule. And I mean, I remember going all the way back to Pop Warner, and we would sit down and watch a video on the proper ways to hit. And once we got into high school, you sit down and watch a video on the proper ways to hit. Well, it's the same thing here. You're going to sit down and talk about the proper ways to hit. You're going to bring in referees to sit down and – well, the referees will talk once we get into training camp with the players.
You're going to use video.
They're going to use video, and they're going to show the players the right way that you should hit and the wrong way to hit somebody. And you're going to get a lot of reaction from the players, a lot of questions from the players, and rightfully so.
We got a call on this issue from Nick, calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Go ahead, Nick. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hi.
As a former pro MMA fighter, I want to get this out. I think this will benefit the NFL players on teaching them moving forward in the future on how to hit. And it goes as far as wrestling is concerned. And there's two techniques when we first have a student come in. We teach them how to shoot in on someone and then how to defend that shot. And basically, when you shoot in on someone, you have to shoot in with your head up, because it gives you that leverage to basically to cut an angle and tackle them to the ground. And then on the flip side of that, when you defend that shot, you sprawl. So with the argument as far as if you have a Leonard Fournette coming in and he has his head down, I would definitely teach my DBs how to sprawl, and basically that'll completely stop his momentum.
All right.
I know it's a little technical,
yeah.
But if they can master how to shoot in on someone and then learn how to sprawl, it completely takes any kind of head hit out of your game.
Now, Nick, I will say this. I know coaches, and Coach McDermott does this, all coaches bring in different people throughout the offseason, and they might bring in somebody like a professional or a wrestler or a guy who teaches MMA or, you know, something like that to teach a guy how to shoot, because that can help with tackling. They do different things. I remember when I was playing, they brought in Navy SEALs. They brought in different karate guys to teach us as receivers on hand placement and how to use your hands and get off of different press techniques and different things like that. So, Nick, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills actually did something like that, and teams across the league actually brought someone in to teach something like that.
Thank you. We had Roger Goodell's comments on the helmet issue. He also talked a little bit about the Bills in his post meetings news conference, which was an hour or two ago in Orlando. Mm-hmm. Our man Sal Capaccio from our flagship WGR radio says that Goodell talked about new era field in Buffalo and a new stadium, and this is the quote from Sal. Regarding Roger Goodell, Goodell was quoted as saying, "I think those talks are better coming from the Pegulas, whether they want to share them with the community. I think they're in the very early stages." That's kind of what Terry Pegula didn't say much yesterday, other than they've had discussions. They're putting money into the stadium now for the changes in the clubs. But was it yesterday we had Terry? Yeah, we listened yesterday. It's early, and they're internal. They're not going to go public with what their plans are for a new stadium or this stadium or renovations of stadiums. We know that the club seat renovation is underway right now. That's the way it should be.
I wouldn't think that they would go public until they have a plan in place, right?
Right.
Where it would actually be and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I would think so.
Maybe even what the stadium will look like, a blueprint of the stadium or something like that. So I don't think we'll hear anything like that for a couple of years.
I agree. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The quarterback talk, where are you with the Bills, and what do you want them to do? We talked yesterday on Twitter, a majority of you, two-thirds of you, said the Bills should package up some draft picks, move up, and get a guy, a premium guy. Which one? That's what we're discussing today. Dan calling from Lancaster. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air with us.
Murph, I got two things for you, buddy.
Yes, sir, buddy.
What happens if Mahomes is a is a franchise quarterback for Denver. How is that last year's draft viewed then, seeing that we swung and missed on him?
They didn't swing and miss. They decided not to take a swing. They decided to move down, get an extra draft pick this year from Kansas City, and get Tre'Davious White. That's not a swing and a miss.
What if they don't get end up with no quarterback this year?
Yeah. What if? What would you say?
I'd say Mahomes, if he's a franchise quarterback, they made a mistake.
Okay. Well,
and another
good.
Thing.
Go ahead and say it.
The Ralph Chuck Healy, first announcer. I was with some octogenarians, which I am at one, and we discussed it, and I was convincing them that Chuck Healy done the first quarter of the first Bills game, Boston in New England, in the old rock pile in August of 1960.
Are you sure about that? Van didn't do it? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm telling you that Chuck Healy, it was almost like if you can go back and look into this, it was almost like a rehearsal or a tryout.
Hmm.
And Chuck Healy done, he was an excellent sports reader.
Sure he was.
But Van Miller was the guy, and he never looked back.
All right.
That was it. Look into it, Murph.
I will try, Dan. Thank you. Thanks for a little homework assignment from Dan.
Yeah.
If I get a couple of minutes sometime, I will look into that. Thank you, Dan. We're going to take a break here. Lorenzo Alexander standing by to join us on the show. More of your phone calls. You want the Bills to move up and get a quarterback? All right. Which one? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Another hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Owners meetings kind of breaking up down in Orlando, Florida. Late yesterday, the owners passed a rule that's going to expand penalties for contact involving helmets. It's more significant, more far-reaching than the NCAA targeting rule. Under the NFL change, a player will be penalized 15 yards and potentially ejected anytime he lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. It applies to tacklers, ball carriers, even linemen. It'll take the place of a previous rule that limited the penalty to using the crown of the helmet. Brand new rule. We're going to talk about it with Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander in just a moment. Bills Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly is undergoing surgery today and is continuing battle against cancer. The surgery is set for this morning in New York City. Earlier this month, Kelly announced that his oral cancer had returned. He had been declared cancer-free a couple of years ago. He was diagnosed with cancer in his jaw in 2013, had surgery a short time after his diagnosis. And then doctors determined that his cancer had spread to his nasal cavities. Additional treatments and surgery in March 2014. Declared cancer-free 2 years ago. Now Kelly back battling again with surgery today in New York City. Johnny Manziel, former first-round pick in the NFL, threw at a pro day at Texas A&M and also met with representatives of several NFL teams, met with the Patriots before and after Texas A&M's pro day. And the Buffalo Sabres getting set to be home tomorrow night against the Detroit Red Wings. Casey Mittelstadt officially signed his entry-level contract yesterday. He practiced with the Sabres today, scheduled to make his NHL debut tomorrow night against Detroit with faceoff scheduled for 7 o'clock. Meantime, Sabres' Kyle Okposo has been named the team's nominee for the Bill Masterton Trophy by the Buffalo chapter of the Hockey Writers Association. The Masterson goes to the player who best exemplifies the qualities of perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. Casey Mittelstadt making his NHL debut tomorrow night at home for the Sabres against Detroit with faceoff scheduled at 7 o'clock. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Our show continues until 3. Happy to have live in studio with us, Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander. Zo, good to have you here, buddy. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. Just hanging out, getting prepared to drive down to Northern Virginia. Spring break next week, so I'm getting a little bit of a head start. And my wife is actually already there.
So the kids still here?
Yeah, they're in school right now. So I thought my daughter had a party yesterday, so I was going to drive down yesterday, but I found out it was today. So we might, as soon as they get out of school, I think I'm going to shoot down.
How far is it drive from here?
6 hours. It's not too bad. A couple of movies, one stop for dinner, and we're there.
Do you, which
just
do you,
you
take?
And the kids?
Yeah, me and the two oldest. My wife actually took the 3-year-old with her. So that's
Which way do you take? Do you go down past Pittsburgh and into Maryland type of thing? How does that?
Yeah. You're taking a lot of different ways. Yeah, that's normal. Normally I just throw the GPS on and I just let that. And it'll take me either way. Right, you know, I just want to get there the fastest way. So I just normally follow that.
That's just funny because I drive to Jersey and it's 6 hours. So it's just
you never listen to me when I tell you the quickest
way. I'm taking that route. That shaves off like a half hour from my route.
Why would you take that route?
Well, I shave off a half hour myself.
You did get a ticket, didn't you?
Yeah,
I did. I got a ticket.
Oh, wow. I did. I'm bad right there.
I gave him a quick route to Jersey, Northern Jersey, and he did it once and said he didn't like it.
You know why?
Too many small towns.
I'm telling you, it's too many small towns.
Yeah, when you feel like you're driving slow, you feel like you're not going as fast. Even if you may get there quicker, just mentally, it's like, man, I'm only doing 30 because I got to go through
these
towns.
These little towns. And then there's, you know, they're little, like, farm towns and stuff. And I don't like it. One time I drove back through at night, and it was like pitch black out. I was like,
"You thinking about get out?"
Yeah. See, like, I gotta go. I'm used to it. Let me get on the main road. I'm comfortable on the main road.
Right. No, I hear you, brother.
Don't you get bored on the expressways and throughways? I do. Don't you get bored?
I mean, it can, but I feel where he's at. I'll take the boredom over the get out scenario. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but you haven't. Well, watch it and you'll understand why we want to stay on the main highway.
Yeah, I got pulled over. I got pulled over like midnight on one of those little towns because I got off the highway. You had to get off the highway to go through this little town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what town I'm talking about.
Yeah, can I say it? Is it Mount Morris?
It's somewhere in there. As you get off the highway to get on to the road that takes you to 28.
28, yes.
Right. So I get off the highway, and it's like 12 o'clock at night, so I'm trying to get here. And the closer I got, I'm like, all right, I'm moving now. I'm trying to get there. And I got off the highway, and I'm riding through this little town. And
speeding?
It dropped.
Okay.
It dropped down to like 35. But I was in such a groove driving, I forgot that I was off the highway. And next thing you know, this cop pulls me over, and I'm in this little town, and I'm like, oh, Lord, please, just let me get through this.
Don't speed.
Yeah, don't speed.
I didn't see you. That's why I was speeding. I told the cop that once. I didn't see you, so I was going.
I lucked out on that one, though. He started talking to me about life. He called some cops up here, and I got out of it. And then he started telling me his whole life story. I'm like, dude, you need to go talk to somebody. You're a cop.
How long did they hold you up?
He held me up for about 30 minutes. I had to talk to him, though, because he let me out of the ticket.
Too. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
all right, come on, let's talk. Let's talk.
I don't like when they talk to you and then give you the ticket.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst.
Hey, I thought we were boys here. What's this ticket? I thought we'd work this out. Right. Lorenzo's with us. You are just back from a weekend in your hometown up in Northern California, up in Oakland, right?
Yeah, I was back there for the foundation. We had our bowling event. It was a huge success. Saw a lot of my high school teammates, some college teammates that I played with throughout the years. And family came down. Mom was out. We did a good job. And then we raised some pretty good money for the youth organization I was talking about as far as providing that meal plan during the summer while school is out. So I'm definitely interested to see how that grows and is impacted.
Now, you talked about one team that usually wins it. Did they win it this year?
No, they didn't win it. It was another Ringer team that came out of nowhere. Yeah, yeah. And I think they kind of fudged the rules a little bit because normally there's six people on the lane. And one of the lanes next to them was open. The group that sponsored it didn't show up. So they actually split their group up.
Oh,
and they were three and three. In my lane, we did pretty good. We had I did 185 one game. My boy did like 160. And another guy did like 140.
Mm-hmm.
But we had two stragglers. I had my little cousin who didn't care.
Yeah.
He bowled about a 10. And, you know, and then we had like an 8-year-old that, you know, it had the bumpers. I was like, well, that's just killing our average.
Yeah.
So, you know, it happens. But it was all in good fun. And we had a good time.
Stragglers.
Aces Foundation. And you raised money and saw friends. I mean, what a great weekend home.
Yeah, right? It was great. Got to sleep a little bit, too, because I had a kid. So I was able to recharge my battery. And the event went so well, I think we're going to do one here in Buffalo. So we're actually in the planning stages of that. So definitely look out for one early June, first weekend in June, second weekend in June, for us to be holding one here locally.
You guys both have little kids. That's big when you can go away and sleep, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I just needed it. And I was kind of sick that day. Remember, I was kind of stuffy. So it was kind of like a compound attack on my body. So when I was able to catch up on my sleep, I was able to recover a little bit.
What was that flight like? You were stuffy. When you're on the flight and you're stuffy, or like you have like an earache or something, it's bad.
I mean, I had an aisle, but you're just next to people, and I'm trying to be polite.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to cough on them and, you know, had my tissue. But, I mean, my ears was messed up. I was jacked up on the flight going out.
Lorenzo in studio with us. A lot to talk about. I want to get you involved in our Twitter poll today, Lorenzo, because you're a you follow the Bills, I know, and you follow
current Bills.
So yesterday we did a poll and asked people, what do you want to do? Do you want to move up or stay put? About two-thirds of our respondents, 60-some percent, said, no, time for Bills for the move up, get a premium quarterback. So today we asked, all right, you want to move up? Which one? The results of our Twitter poll today are this. Which quarterback is worth trading up for? 43% say the UCLA guy, Josh Rosen. 24% say the USC guy, Sam Darnold. 22% say none of them are worth trading up for. 11% say Josh Allen from Wyoming. Of course, we left some out. Right. All right. We couldn't get everybody up there on Twitter, and we're happy to talk about it on the telephone line at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let me combine the two questions for you, Lorenzo. Do you believe the Bills should trade up and get a quarterback? And if so, which one?
Well, I definitely think if you're in position, and I don't know what we deem is too expensive, but to get up in that realm where you could get a guy that you have identified as a franchise-caliber player game-changer, as far as which one, my personal opinion is I don't care because I don't watch these kids, so I don't know. And this is the football player, so I just want somebody that Brandon and Sean and our whole – scouting department, whoever they decide it is, that's who it is, because they've watched tons of film, ton of interviews, ton of back story as far as figuring out the kid's background and what he's made of and where he comes from, what he's done. So I'll let them make that decision. I just can't say Rosen over Allen, over Jackson, just because I haven't watched enough tape on the guys. And even if I have, even if they were a world beater, majority of the guys flake out in the league. Yeah. It's just the percentages. So it really doesn't matter to me because I don't know the future.
You know, we have a lot of smart callers that call up to the show.
We
get some. Yeah, we do. We get some
surprisingly.
Sometimes.
I heard a caller on the rule, the MMA guy.
Yeah.
I have some things about the MMA guy. I would love to ask him some questions.
That means you heard the question of what is a franchise quarterback. I think that was right around the same time that called.
Yeah, well, I might have just – I just heard the MMA guy.
All right.
Yeah.
So we had a caller who called up, and he said, what is a franchise quarterback?
Right.
So I'll pose that question to you.
What is one that is already established?
Yeah, what would you define as a franchise
quarterback? How would you define a guy as a franchise quarterback?
A guy that wins games, that leads. I mean, obviously has been in the league, has some longevity to him, is able to make plays and guys around him better. And that's kind of been diluted over the years just because the quarterback position is such a premium position. So guys, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago who you would say are probably not franchise guys, they are franchise guys now. So I think it's been diluted a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, obviously everybody knows Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, those caliber of quarterbacks being, and it's probably about 7 or 8 in the league that are franchise guys.
That was interesting that you said it's been diluted a little bit because we see it every year, or we see it often, where a quarterback will come in, RG3. Now, his was a little different because he had injuries, but you have a quarterback that comes in, lights the league on fire,
right,
and then all of a sudden, second, third year, there's nothing. But after that first year, everybody's like, man, this is the franchise quarterback, at least the fan base.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, they're even deemed a franchise guy before they even throw a football in a lot of ways. And that was in Robert's case and a lot of the young guys that come out, even Andrew Luck. But, I mean, over the course of the last 5 years, I wouldn't say he's there yet because of his injuries, that have occurred. He has the talent to be one, but just hasn't been healthy.
Now, winning games is one thing, but you said longevity. How long do you need to be in this league and winning games before – you're considered a franchise quarterback?
I mean, I would say some consistency of at least 3 or 4 years. Because by that time, defenses have scouted you, D coordinators have figured out what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses. Players know where you like to go, your tendencies. And guys that are normally elite continue to get better and rise to another level and never get complacent and stay in that, become that one trick pony that some of these young guys come out and do. And you say, man, why is he fizzled out? Well, he didn't continue to work. He didn't grow his game. He didn't work on his weaknesses. Yeah. He just thought that skill set that allowed him to ball out and to get drafted, ball out in 1 year, one or two, was going to sustain him for the next 8 years.
Right.
So there has to be some underlining ability or a character trait of motivation for you to want to be better regardless of what's going on. And that's why you see some of these guys separate themselves.
Right.
One of my teammates was played with Drew Brees and said he just had a fire to be the greatest. And you see it in his everyday work ethic. And I can't say it's the same case for some of the younger quarterbacks that are coming out and who are phased out of the league.
Do you think we as a fan base, even organizations, give – these quarterbacks enough time to even develop into a franchise quarterback?
Well, not in today's world. I mean, everything is microwave, and that's the sense of our culture, right? If I'm paying you all this money, you got to come in here and win right now. And that's and that's a tall feat for a lot of guys. I mean, Tom Brady sat for a little bit, and Rodgers sat for a long time. So the guys that are at the top, that you would put at the top, didn't play right away. They had some a maturing process of where they could figure things out, get their feet wet, see what their predecessor did wrong or right. And just watch the rest of the league and really grow and develop their abilities. And it wasn't all on them right away with all this pressure. And if, especially when you're a young quarterback and you're getting drafted, most of the time it's to a team that's not very good. So then you get out there and everybody's looking at you and you don't have the tools around you. You know, we always want to say the quarterback is the guy, but it's the most dependent position on the field. You got to have receivers that's going to separate, catch the ball. You got to have an offensive line that's going to protect you and keep you upright. A nice running game would help, you know, to give you advantageous coverages. So, but when you throw a guy and you're the only guy on that team, we just going to stop him. And it's hard. We're going to hit, knock him out the game. And I mean, it's just – and you have that type of mindset going against a guy like that. And those guys struggle the most because they have so much going against them because they look to their left and their right and there's really nobody to help them. It's all on them.
Who are the franchise quarterbacks you've played with? Who are the best?
The ones that I've played with?
Yes. Anybody?
Who'd
you have in Arizona?
Carson. Carson was really good. I had Donovan McNabb, but it was at the tail end of his career. So I wasn't Donovan as who he was with the Eagles.
Right.
You were with Derek Carr.
I was with Derek Carr. Played with him. I thought he was really good. A guy that's going to, I think, continue to get better. Obviously had a down year last year. I think a lot of that is due to the injury and missing some football and trying to figure out just how to play again. So I think he's going to be better this upcoming season. Who else have I had? I mean, Robert for that 1 year. And that's really it. I mean,
Would you consider Derek Carr and Robert Griffin franchise quarterbacks? I mean, Carr looks like he could be.
I wouldn't call Robert one. He only did it for 1 year, essentially. He had the potential, but potential and actuality or reality are two different things.
Carr has that potential.
He's in the midst of becoming it. Obviously, he's gotten paid off his first year deal second deal. And he is climbing that ladder of consistency of being a dominant quarterback. I think he had, my year I was there. The next year he was pretty good. Then he got hurt the third season. And now he's to his fourth, he was balling and got hurt. And last year probably was solid number-wise. It was just a drop-off to what he had did the prior year.
With Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, joining us in studio, you can ring us up, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
It's interesting to me because, I mean, you look at a guy like Eli Manning. Now, he won two Super Bowls. Most people would say their defense has won the Super Bowls. He was a quarterback.
Yeah, and I was always in that camp because I played against Eli, and I think that's more to his personality versus his ability.
Okay.
And I think that's because people look at him like, oh, he just doesn't look like he's in it. He looks like he's just out there going through the motions. Yeah. But that dude, he's an awesome quarterback, and he's done it for, 14 years now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be hard for me to say Eli Manning is not a franchise quarterback.
It's crazy because even the fan base down there and me being from there, knowing so many Giants fans, they never really truly believed in Eli Manning as their franchise
They will miss Eli Manning when he's dead.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because he was Peyton's little brother. I mean, I think you live in that shadow, too. So, and then his personality is so much different than what Peyton is.
Yeah.
So that's what you expect. Oh, this is an Eli or a Manning. So I'm expecting this, you know, this leader, this dude is going to put up, you know, 50 touchdowns. And he's going to get out there, have some drive and passion. And he's more passive-aggressive type leader.
Yeah.
And if you talk to guys that have played with him, like, I played with Tuck for a little bit in Oakland, he loved the guy. He loved what he brought to the team and how he led and what he did for him. Obviously, they won two championships there, too, so that adds to it. But he's made a lot of plays. He's beaten me a lot of times when I was in Washington. And he's won that division several times. So, he's elite. He's a franchise guy. And he has the longevity to back it up.
It's just always – I feel like we don't give these quarterbacks coming in, and obviously it's the number one position, I guess, in the game. But they just don't get enough time, really, to develop into sure. that. And especially now, they're coming in. The coaches don't even have enough time to develop these guys. And the coaches are getting fired so fast that they have the pressure to find that quarterback and that quarterback to perform right now. And when that quarterback doesn't perform, the coach gets fired. The new coach comes in and it brings another quarterback, you know. And it's like you just don't get enough time to really develop into a franchise quarterback. It takes years for other positions. It takes years for receivers to develop in a lot of guys to develop into a number one or a franchise receiver.
Right. Yeah.
Quarterback, you got to do so many different things on the field, and then you have off the field stuff that you have to also deal with. And it takes a while for you to be able to grasp all of that stuff, and I just don't think they have enough time.
Let's take a few phone calls while Lorenzo is with us on this quarterback question for the Bills. Steve calling from New York City. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John. I really love your show. You know, being a small kid from Buffalo, no matter where I am, I'm always like listening to your show.
Thanks, Steve.
I travel a lot as an adult. I'm really, really panicking, John, because I think we definitely have to trade up. Because I remember when I moved to New York, one of the drafts I actually went to watch was at, I think, 2004 draft, where we were right around 12. And that year it was like three great quarterbacks coming out. And we just missed Roethlisberger. You know, we didn't, make the move to trade up. Right. We ended up drafting a great wide receiver, Lee Evans.
Right.
And then later on we panicked and drafted J.P. Watson.
Yeah.
I hate to see that happen again. And this year, I have a lot of family in media. And this year, one of the things I heard is that here in New York is that the Giants really love Sam Darnold. And that's why Cleveland is making all this noise saying that they love Darnold because they actually want the Giants to give up draft pick just to flip positions and take Darnold. It's one of the moves that Cleveland's kind of playing with. I hear that Cleveland really likes Josh Allen, even though he's like kind of shaky. You know, he has, out of all the quarterbacks, the most plays available to him because of his big arm.
Yeah.
He's the one that has the widest playbook available to him. And, you know, I see him throw like against Mason Rudolph and I see him throw against other, he throws high. He gets off platform. It is worrisome, but, you know.
Well, Steve, don't panic. We're still four. I mean, you sound distressed. We've got 4.5 weeks until the draft, Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Donald, I've been trying to tell people there's a lot going to happen, I think, in this next month. Before the 4 weeks
right.
from tomorrow is day one of the draft. I guarantee you there's going to be moves made by teams, maybe the Bills, in these next 4 weeks.
Yeah, and it will be. But I think the key and what I've seen from our front office, led by Brandon, obviously, is a ability to take emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have the sense of panic or frustration or what happened before I got here, or you know the fans really want us to do this, because when you operate in that mindset, you end up, I would say, majority of the time making a bad decision that's not advantageous to your big picture and your big plan.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we can move up to number one if we really wanted to, but I mean, how much do you really want to give up?
Mm-hmm.
And you're always playing that balancing game of, is this guy really worth it? Do we see that him translating right now? Because when you give that up, you got to win right now.
Right.
And it just is what it is. They don't, that grace period, us, the drought, that was last year. It's what have you done for me lately in the NFL. So yeah, they might have bought, our organization maybe a year or two, but if you do bad this year, next year, because you traded away a slew of possible draft picks this year that can make your team better and solidify and get back to the playoffs and grow and maybe go a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start playing with that in your mind as a GM, because you job security, players we need, do I need to move up? I mean, they're balancing all of that and trying
right.
to figure it out. And I think that's the key, is not having an emotional attachment that's fueled by fans or by a player that you may really love and start chasing guys
right.
because then you lose or move away from your big picture. And they have a plan and they'll execute it. Now, if we're able to do it, great. But if not, don't try to lose the farm because you feel like you really have to go up, because then you're missing on maybe 4 or 5 players that can add to depth, be a possible starter, and make your team better. And whoever that quarterback is, job
yeah.
even easier.
It could be a career changing decision for Brandon Bean.
Sure. I would think it will be.
It is.
Either way.
Either way. Whether you trade up and get that guy Or if you sit there and you keep all your picks and you draft a bunch of guys and those guys end up all good, if you trade up, give everything away, you draft a guy and you draft the wrong guy, that could, you know, that could really hurt your career as a GM. If you do it and you draft the Hall of Fame quarterback, that could really catapult you into you'll be a GM forever, or Hall of Fame GM or something like that. If you sit there and you build out the team and you find, let's just say you find a franchise quarterback in the second round or something like that, then you end up a Hall of Fame GM, right? Because so this decision, because you were lucky. But, I mean, there's a lot of luck in this stuff, right? I mean, you're still smart. You still got to draft that guy.
Right, and I wouldn't even say that's necessarily lucky. You can, I mean, there's a whole bunch of great players scattered throughout the draft. Obviously, the more well-known ones are first-rounders, but, I mean, everybody would take Russell Wilson, right? Everybody would take Tom Brady, right? I mean, so there are guys that are spread out throughout the draft, and I don't necessarily mean that you're lucky. I think people oftentimes – this whole process right now is to devalue guys from the end. I mean, they just devaluing because you could hear something great in the beginning, and then when it gets closer, it's like, oh, he's horrible. He can't play in the league. And, you know, and they just mess it. They just throwing out so much bad information to devalue guys so they can get them lower. So you can't really trust always everything that you always hear. And then to say that a player in the second round goes and you find him, he's lucky, I wouldn't say that either. I think he just maybe didn't have all the skill set that you might have wanted to see in college. Maybe he didn't play in a big school. Maybe he played a small one. Maybe he's a little shorter than what you would like. But is able to overcome a lot of those things when he gets to the league because of that self-motivation fire to be one of the greatest quarterbacks ever.
Let's take one more call on quarterbacks. This is Bob in West Valley, New York. Go ahead, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hey, last year I thought we should have taken Deshaun Watson, but he did a great job getting Tre'Davious White, but I thought Watson was a quarterback that I hadn't seen come out of college in quite a few years. And a lot of people had him picked in the first five picks, and he ended up going real late, and Houston grabbed him way up around 23rd or 24th. And I think the Bills standing at 12 or possibly moving 10 or 11 could get Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson. And I'm not too high on Allen. I'm really not. I look at all the statistics on both those guys. I think Mayfield's cocky. I think you need that type of quarterback. He's like Brady. And I think he's got a lot to show. And I think we can get him at 10, 11, or 12.
Well, okay, they're at 12 now. I don't know if he lasts till 12. What do you think, Donald?
Baker Mayfield?
Yeah.
I think – no, I don't. I think all four of those guys would be gone just because teams are thirsty for a quarterback. And, you know, if you're not one of the teams that can get up into the top three or whatever, you can't get up into to get those top three guys. And Baker Mayfield might be a top three guy. Baker Mayfield might go number one. You don't know. But I think they'll all be gone by at least number six.
Lorenzo, we're not going to make you talk about quarterbacks.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
much
it.
Much longer. You got a few more minutes, though, right?
Yeah.
Because we do want to ask you about some of the new rules, especially the helmet hits. And we want you to straighten out Donald on the Final Four.
Okay, that
so
sounds
you got time
really,
to do that. We're going to take a break, come back more with Lorenzo Alexander when we return. The John Murphy Show coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We got our buddy Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. In between trips, you're probably, I'm guessing, what, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks away from the off-season workouts, the more formal off-season workouts. I would think you're probably halfway through the off-season. You've spent the entire off-season here in Buffalo.
Yeah, well, majority of it.
Yeah, you're in and out a little bit. Would you do it again? I mean, do you think this is the way to do an off-season, hanging out in Buffalo?
Mean,
the weather's been brutal.
Yeah.
I'll say that so you don't have
to. Why not? It's the truth. Everybody you ask, people from here say it's brutal. It's the worst winter we've had.
It's not that difficult a winter.
Yeah,
it's just long, and
it's
there's no light at the end of the tunnel
right
here.
So, I mean, I would do it again if my kids – the reason why we did it because my kids wanted to stay in school. We've been bouncing around. So to give them stability, it makes sense.
Yeah. Are you the only one? You got any teammates?
Yeah, I was the only one consistently here. We had guys that were injured coming in for treatment, but they would leave and come back and, you know, kind of be in and out. So I was the only one. But it's fine because my family's here.
Yeah.
My kid's here.
We're here.
Yeah, you're here. So we're good. So I'm good. You
good.
Know, as long as they're in my life.
Here.
Yeah.
We're glad you stayed.
Yep.
The owners meeting in, Orlando yesterday. This came out of nowhere, really, Lorenzo. We were going off the air yesterday. Remember, Donald, and it came out, hey, they might have some targeting rule, right? It wasn't targeting. It's more far-reaching than targeting. An extension of penalties involving contact involving helmets. Under the change, a player gets a 15-yard penalty and could be ejected every time he lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. Your thoughts, please.
I wish people listening to the broadcast could see my face right now.
Yeah.
This is...
You got to be careful what you say. You don't want
I don't. I think it's a stupid rule.
I do too.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I understand the intent and where it's coming from as far as trying to eliminate injuries, concussions as much as you can from the game. But it's only so much you can do before you start changing the essence of the game. It's football. It's a contact sport. Everybody's not meant to play it. Everybody can't endure the rigors of the game. So we've made some strides in making the game safe. But this is, to me, going overboard. I don't think it was well thought out because somebody lowers their head almost every play. And just a quarterback sneak, easy one. Take the ball, you dive forward. You have lowered your head. Mm-hmm. I go and try to hit you. Who's getting thrown out the game? Who's getting the fine?
Right.
Not the quarterback. And he initiated the pad level that low. It's going to be me.
Right.
You know, I heard a caller coming on MMA talking about the different techniques they use. My only argument, that makes sense. Yeah, if a guy is breaking down and standing in front of me trying to shake me. But I'm running. Let's say I'm on kickoff or I'm running from the opposite side of the field to go get a running back at an angle. What did he call it? Rawling? I guess that means kind of like push them down if they duck their head.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that when you're running 4.45 full speed tilt across the field.
Right.
I mean, it's so, and that's more of the game. Even if you're meeting in the hole, you're not just meeting and stopping and trying to size each other up to wait to dive in. So I think it's going to be hard to call. They may emphasize it, but God forbid it happens in a playoff game or a championship game or a game that's to win a division and you throw a guy out like Von Miller or Khalil Mack or Micah Hyde or somebody of that nature where teams are game planning against them and we really are dependent on them to play as a defender because it's going to change the schematics of the game. And then you're going to go back and look back and say, oh, well, it probably shouldn't have been thrown out.
Right.
Well, it's too late then.
Right.
Because they're going to err on the side of caution. That's what they're taught. And then another point is, this is going to be, they say all players, but we all know they mean defensive players. That's just wording.
Right.
A good friend of mine that plays in this league, linebacker, was talking to a ref on a flight and was like, you know, we do have this rule where running backs drop their head and that's technically supposed to be a penalty. And the ref told him, I would never call that. I'm never going to call it against a guy that's trying to protect himself. So, I mean, you put that on the books, the refs have to still call it, though, and they're not. It's going to be a defensive rule. So I think it's just not well thought of. I think the intent is great. I would be even up for if they flag a guy. I get it. It happens quick. Flagging, 15. Then instead of ejecting him, because obviously that's a paycheck and a lot of other things can go along with that, have like a panel of three people. They review it, they talk about it, and then they decide whether or not it's malicious or not. And if you have guys that are repeat offenders, then that's when you start executing those guys and tossing them guys out. But we just had a game where Gronkowski didn't get thrown out of the game, and he did a malicious move, and he get thrown out at all. So now you're going to tell me you're going to throw out a guy that's trying to make a football play? I mean, it's just stupid.
Lendro, it sounds like to me you are more upset about the possibility for ejection than about the penalty itself.
Yeah. Ejections, because that's money, cats out of money's pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, what if it's a two-game suspension or is at the end of the game and then they get suspended for the next game? The penalty I get because it can happen in a game where I'd rather it not happen at all, but I think the way they have the rule now is fine. Helmet to helmet, defensive receiver, all that is – we've had to change the way we play, and we have to deal with some of that. I get that. But to take it to another notch to where now you're suspending guys and potentially changing the outcome of the game because some of these guys that are going to get tossed out play a vital role in you winning or losing. And I don't think you should put that in the ref's hands. or you know, anybody's hands to throw it out where he can change the dynamic of a game.
Let me play devil's advocate here. You just mentioned it, what, 3-4 years ago they changed the rule, helmet to helmet, defenseless receivers, and it worked, right? I mean, players adjusted the way they tackle.
Yeah, I mean,
people lowered their aiming point.
They lowered their aiming point, and now you have more shoulder injuries, you have more ACL injuries, you have more leg injuries. So it maybe not be concussion, but it's an injury. I don't want to be hurt at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just changed the dynamic of the injuries. So, yeah, you can adjust. I would like to know how I am going to adjust because my body is at the top of my – I mean, my head is at the top of my body. So you have to play with leverage and lean at some point, and I can't hit you with my head or face mask at all.
Right.
I mean, even if I come in with a good heads up, hit what I see, wrap you, mm-hmm. and my helmet goes to your helmet just because maybe I missed or you duck a little bit, I'm ejected.
Right.
I'm just saying the – just how what is the margin of error in our game, and plus with the speed it's played at,
right.
to throw somebody out is so drastic when the intent is not there to hurt somebody.
Let me, and I know you know this, I'm going to ask you to respond to this. Rich McKay is chairman of the competition committee. He said, it seems like players are getting more comfortable playing with their helmets as a weapon rather than as a protective device.
That's
do you
when,
see that? Do you
no,
use your helmet
when you
as a weapon?
No, sparing guys. Sparing guys is using your head as a helmet as a helmet. I mean, your helmet as a weapon. Now, if I'm running, I'm gonna be more reckless abandonment to go in there and make a good solid tackle because I have a helmet on versus no helmet because then your teeth get knocked out and all that. So yeah, it makes me I guess more fearless or more aggressive. But that's the nature of our game, and that's why people watch it. Mm-hmm. So now you're gonna tell me I have to run full tilt across the field, try to tackle somebody at an angle. Now I have to kind of pull up and maybe drag him down, or I don't know how to do that. Running backs are big.
Right.
They're good.
Their shoulder and they're lowering their
head. So yeah. What do you want me to do? This rule just puts you at such of a disadvantage to really tackle somebody or anything because it's just not practical in my mind.
You know, that for me, I get when you hit a defenseless receiver helmet to helmet, and I'm a receiver. I totally understand it. The guys on defense, they are really in a place of a disadvantage right now, especially, though, when they are talking about tackling a Leonard Fournette, a Chris Ivory on this team, you know, because those dudes are not looking to run around you. They're not looking to shake you, none of that stuff. When I see you, I'm lowering my shoulder, and I'm naturally going to lower my head too. And if you come in and you lower your head and you hit me, and let's just say as the running back, I get knocked out. But I'm the one that initiated that contact because I'm a running back with the ball. The defender is probably going to get suspended, probably going to get ejected out of the game because you see me laying there on the field. And I think sometimes we forget that the guys on defense are trying to protect themselves as well. You know, I mean – that's just the fact of the matter. They're trying to protect themselves as well. Yeah, they're coming to make a tackle. But if you're going in to make a tackle on somebody that's lowering his shoulder, I'm trying to protect myself as well. What, you want me to just stand up and get ran over? That's not what's going to happen here.
Donna, what was the technique Kelso talked about, the Seahawks?
He talked about the Seahawks implemented the technique of taking your head out of the tackle. And it's more on an angle
right.
type of thing.
And I played for a coach that came from Ken Norton, and this is what they did. It wasn't necessarily that you're taking the helmet out of it, is that you're having a better angle. So what we were taught growing up was a head across the bow, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's going to create more of a probability of somebody going helmet to helmet. Because the running back ducks, you're trying to go across his body. So that's just a natural, more natural. So what they talked about was more of a rugby tackle, which would be shoulder. I'm trying to attack the near shoulder. I'm not trying to come across the body. So I still may get a little helmet graze going on, but it's not as impactful, and I'm not getting hit like maybe in my temple,
mm-hmm.
or I'm not hitting them in their temple as aggressively. So, like I guess what you're about to allude to is more of the angle of when I make contact at, that's going to save me. And that's what Seattle's done, mm-hmm. And I've done some of that here too as well. We talk about rubber band as attacking at near hip, and that works. But sometimes your body is just going to be in a vulnerable position. There's only one way to do it,
right.
to make the play. And that's where I'm at, where I'm at with it. Because like we said, the running backs, they initiate the pad level. So is it whoever initiates that pad level is going to get thrown out?
Right.
Or whoever delivers the blow is going to get thrown out? And I just know it's going to be defensive players. Mm-hmm. And I just know what it is.
Well, I was saying to Donald earlier, you know, Patriots fourth and a yard. You know, Brady will come up and run a sneak real quick.
Exactly.
With his head down.
Exactly.
Likely to hit somebody with that helmet. And you think they're going to toss out Tom Brady after that play? No.
No, they're not. And I mean, so I don't even know why they put this rule on the book.
Well, I want to bring that up too a little bit, because apparently they were talking about it, and you were at a meeting at the combine, right, about this sort of thing.
We didn't talk about this rule. They kind of talked about throwing guys out, but they never really mentioned targeting. But you could tell by the body language for Troy, and I forget the other gentleman's name. I want to say I forget what team he's with. You could tell. This is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because Thomas was making the same argument. I'm like, he drops his head and I drop. I'm the ones getting fined.
Right.
Y'all never called it on him, and they're not going to call it. They say it, but they're not.
Right.
Because apparently it was talked about at the combine. They were going to make it a point of emphasis. They told the owners this yesterday, and the owner said, you know what, go ahead and make it a rule change. You need more dialogue.
Them.
You need more
discussion
about it.
It doesn't affect the owners.
Right.
The owners are not on the field. So I would love to know what some of the coaches had to say. Did they have a say-so in this? Because
they're actually
the ones that are coaching some of this technique,
right,
and they know how the game is played.
It wasn't even on the list of potential rule
changes.
That's
what's crazy. Because typically, if something like this happens where it's not on the list, it gets introduced to the owners, they'll table it till the May meetings.
Yeah.
Right? Where, all right, well, now we have some time to discuss this with the players, maybe something like that, or with coaches, maybe. But this came up, and it went through.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it
because
like
it's all about appeasing public opinion. Mm-hmm. CTE, concussions, youth football's not, its participation is down.
Yeah.
So let's make something happen that's going to – they're really looking out for the future of the game. And as cold as it sounds, everybody's not meant to play football.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not. Everybody's not built to handle this game. And eventually you get to a certain level, you get weeded out. And it even happens on the pro level. Some guys are concussion prone, get them all the time. Some guys you rarely ever see get one, and they have some longevity. And it's just the nature of it. People blow out the ACLs all the time. Some guys don't. I mean, what is it? I mean, some guys are just built to handle it. And I think that's part of the allure of the game. That's what separates some guys that have played in this league a long time, some longevity, and you get some respect off that. And I think that's what the fans watch. They want to watch contact, a contact collision sport.
Mm-hmm. Lorenzo, your comment, everybody's not meant to play this game. The league could never say that. They will never say that. Doug Whaley, GM here, got in trouble a couple of years ago for saying something very similar.
It's the truth, though.
Something about
it is.
It's
backed
it's
by science. Some guys are more or have a precondition to getting concussions. I mean, I can't make it up. I'm not making it up.
No, I know.
It just is what it is. You have kids out there now that you look at them, or adults is like, well, you know, he ain't no football player because he's 5'5", 130. He ain't built to play this game. He's just not. He's going to get out there and get hurt, right?
Yeah.
So you cannot think that by putting in this rule, the game is going to change, or you're helping it, because the way it's supposed to be played, it is a violent game.
Yeah.
It is a physical game. It is a collision game. And the head is a part of it, because it's going to get hit, because it's at the top of our body. When you play with leverage, even at the line of scrimmage, they get hit in the head every single play, hands, face mask, hands. I mean, so they can't hit with their face mask anymore at the line of scrimmage?
Right.
I mean, so what does it mean?
And they won't get ejected, even though they're hitting helmets every time.
And
it's because it's not outside, whereas it was everybody could actually see it.
And if you're worried about injuries that much, why are we still allowing guys to get cut?
Yeah.
Why are we still allowing guys to get chip blocked?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we still allowing guys to get trapped? If it's that big of an issue, we're not.
Mm-hmm.
We're worried about the offensive guys, because that's the way the game is going to be played. That's the only thing they worry about.
Yeah.
So they don't really care about injuries, because there's a lot of things in our game that we allow to happen that cause injuries to happen that we never address
mm-hmm.
at all when we talk about competition committee.
You know, there's a physical side of everybody's not built to play this game, and then there's a mental side, because there are guys out there that you could look at and you'd be like, man, you 6'6".
Yeah.
Big dude, you should be playing football.
He can't think and play.
And just, yeah, he can't. Or he's just
right.
Soft.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
He just
that too,
can't.
Yeah.
He just is not meant to get hit and hit other people and work like that, all of that stuff. You know, everybody really is not meant to play football. It's not one of those sports where you could just walk on the field and do it and not really love the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Lorenzo, you going to watch Final Four this weekend?
Yeah, I might try to catch it, even though I'll be on vacation. We're trying to sell a house this weekend, so.
Down in Virginia.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know how much TV I'll get in, but I'm going to try to turn into that Michigan game for sure.
Would you talk to him about Michigan? He's a hater.
Why do you hate him so much? Just because of John?
Here's the thing. I don't hate.
Is that an underlying
Michigan
thing about you and John?
It's reflective of something.
I know
deeper.
Something going on. Yes. I don't
deeper.
Know.
I agree.
It's
deeper.
It's a lot deeper.
You know, my daughter's graduating with a psychology degree, so I know a little bit of something.
Shut her up here.
Counseling, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's some hater in there. But if my team was in there, John might be the same way with me.
No, I wouldn't. I said, boy, I hope your team does well this
Who
weekend.
Is your team?
UConn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You went to UConn?
And I had cousins that played.
Oh,
there.
Okay. All right.
Lorenzo, have a great weekend. Good luck selling your house. Thanks for spending a few minutes with those are your comments on the new rule. Really interesting. Really interesting. Really, it's good to hear you say that.
Yeah, and it's a lot of guys around the league that feel the same way. I mean, you've seen it. I mean,
you
Mitchell
are right in line for being affected by this more than anybody.
I am right in line, and I play, and I'm a guy that plays on the edge. So now you're gonna tell me I've never been thrown out of a game? I've been fined once back in 2010 for horse collaring. But now I hit a guy like the play we had against what was my man's name? I hit him in Cincinnati. Hit him. So now if I get close, maybe if I graze his helmet, I'm getting thrown out. And I've never had one. I'm not a malicious player.
Right,
Players wouldn't say that. So now I'm out of the game. I'm fined. I lose $50,000.
Yeah.
And I have to just sit there and like that. It's stupid.
Very good. Lorenzo, thanks. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us today. Don and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Live from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's finest security and home theater and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What did we learn? We had Mark Kelso, our good buddy Mark Kelso, was in studio today in the first hour of the show, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network and, of course, longtime Bills safety. Mark Kelso talked to us about the new rule, the way the NFL has expanded the helmet hit rule. Here's what Mark Kelso had to say about it.
Just stay away from the head and don't go below the knee. And then use the front of your shoulder to hit. If you don't drop your pads to use the top of your shoulder, you're going to keep your head up. And I think that's what the NFL is saying. Look, you need to tackle with your head up. Don't drop it. Make sure your head is up the entire time. So if a guy's coming at me, a running back's coming, and he's going to drop his shoulder on me, in that situation, if I dip and try to make a tackle with my shoulder, probably going to make the helmet to body contact. So in that case, you just catch the player and then roll him and wrestle him down to the ground. But in other instances, you need to lead with that shoulder that's closest, and then you need to keep your head on the other side so it stays out of contact.
That's what Mark Kelso says, that it's not that difficult. On the other side of the argument, it seems to me, is Lorenzo Alexander, the guest who just left. Lorenzo, current Bills linebacker, talked to us about the expansion of the NFL's helmet hit rule.
I wish people listening to the broadcast could see my face right now.
Yeah.
This is.
You got to be careful what you say. You don't want.
No, I'm be careful what I say. I think it's a stupid rule.
I do too.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I understand the intent and where it's coming from as far as trying to eliminate injuries, concussions as much as you can from the game. But it's only so much you can do before you start changing the essence of the game. It's football. It's a contact sport. Everybody's not meant to play it. Everybody can't endure the rigors of the game.
Lorenzo Alexander doesn't like the expansion of the helmet hit rule. Somewhere in between there, between Kelso and Alexander, I think the truth lies, Donald. I don't know. I think the league will come out of the – first of all, the commissioner admitted already today they need to flesh this out. They need to figure out what exactly would qualify for an expulsion from a game.
Why pass it?
I don't know, because I do think it's public relations, as Lorenzo kind of hinted at, because they know that the game is under attack from people who think it's too violent, and the CTE and all the head hits maybe are too much to bear, and the owners, in a hurry to get out of Orlando, passed it just to say, we're doing something about it.
Oh, I got to get to the airport.
Exactly.
To catch my flight. I'm flying first.
But I think that they'll probably find a middle ground. You know, even as Lorenzo talked about all of the issues, I sat here and thought to myself, maybe they'll meet in May and say, you know what, we're not ready for this yet. We'll do it next year. Because clearly this was a decision that was rushed.
This was rushed. And I think this is a very serious decision that can affect and change their game.
Yeah.
And change the viewership, all of that stuff. So, yeah, I think they'll at least talk about this again in May, and maybe they'll table it till next year.
We did not talk about quarterbacks the entire hour, which is a relief for us.
Yeah.
But we did talk about quarterbacks on our Twitter poll. All right, if you think the Bills should trade up and get one of those premium quarterbacks, which quarterback is worth trading up for on Twitter? 42% of you said Josh Rosen from UCLA. 24% said Sam Darnold, USC. 23% said none of them. Don't bother trading up. 11% said Josh Allen. Yes, we know there are other quarterbacks as well. We'll talk more quarterbacks tomorrow on the show. Greg Cosell is going to be with us tomorrow at 1 o'clock on the show. Yes, tomorrow, Thursday. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Colton, and Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood. Our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.